Today's Tuesday, May 19th, 2020, and this week on the Birdland BS Podcast, the NFL reopened their doors. Sort of. Not really. And are we being punked by the MLB with these potential rules? The Terps get their guy. What's it going to mean for the program moving forward? And Michael Jordan wins his sixth NBA title. Stay tuned.
That time, so let's take it to the Birdland. That Baltimore home flavor is coming firsthand. Fred Scott and Ryan, tell them the word, man. Mixing a little BS to make it work, man. Sports, they got it. Want excitement, the topic. Make sure when they toss you the ball, you don't drop it. With all that swag, you're gonna listen regardless. Here comes the pitch, so it's time to get it started. It's Birdland BS.
That BS, BS.
What's up, BSers? Fred Scott, episode 147 of the Birdland BS podcast. We got a lot of news, a lot of stories.
I got the biggest news of all.
Yeah? What's that?
Corona still sucks.
Yeah, Corona still sucks. The beer's okay, but this virus.
Yeah.
The hell with 2020. The hell with this year. Going around. It's like I'm not even counting 2020 as like a year towards my age.
Have you seen where somebody's like lifted off everything that happens each month, and it was like last, you know, coronavirus, then the murder hornets, and then somebody's like, and Godzilla's gonna come out of the lake, and we're all.
I thought we were gonna be saved. I thought like the praying mantis was gonna keep us away from the murder hornets, and then somebody posted another video of the murder hornet destroying and eating the head off a praying mantis. We're doomed.
Yeah, we're screwed.
We're all doomed.
Oh man.
It's not this virus. It's going to be a bee that gets us.
I'm done with this. But good other news otherwise, right? I mean,
we do.
NFL reopened their doors.
Yeah, man. NFL is opening their doors, sort of.
No. Not
Cry not.
Happen. Not happening.
Yeah, maybe if you're like the janitors and whatnot.
I mean,
we're going to talk a little bit about that and what that means for the Ravens and how does that change things progressing towards the potential of a 2020 season.
Yeah.
We'll see how that, you know, what we kind of take us away from that. What does that mean for some of these rookies? What does it mean for some of these second year players and how that might affect their chances of starting roles?
Yeah. I'm excited for us to kind of break this down because there's some major changes that are coming down the pipe, you know, and what it could mean for the Ravens. So I'm curious to get your take on the effects for the team. So,
yeah. And then we're going to talk a little bit about Major League Baseball. The Orioles don't really have a whole lot of news going on with them, but we're going to check in.
Is the MLB punking us at this point with this rule change? If you have not seen this, stay tuned, because we're going to get into these potential rules and how it's going to affect the Orioles. But are we getting punked?
I don't know, man. It's going to be a surprise for me. I haven't even taken a look at it yet. I don't even know, so I'm interested to see what happens with
this.
So
help me God, Fred, if you have Ashton Kutcher pop up all here and go, gotcha, guys!
Man. Give me a lot of credit. I wish I had that kind of pool. Get Ashton Kutcher on the show.
Yeah, right.
The Terps, man, they get their guy. They get their home run at quarterback, or potentially home run at quarterback.
I was gonna say,
is it really
a home run or is it a name? We're gonna get into that because I want to get your take on whether you actually think this is a home run or not.
And the series that has been keeping us going for the last 5 weeks now, the last dance. Comes to an end. Jordan wins his sixth title, as if we didn't know that was coming.
If you didn't know that, you don't follow basketball or you weren't born in the 90s. One of the two, pick one.
Right. So we're going to talk a little bit about all that. But before we do, I want to remind you guys, if you've ever been injured at work or in an auto accident and weren't sure who to call, 855-MD-CRASH, the Maryland personal injury attorneys that will have your back. If you find yourself in an unfortunate situation, and I know I have, give our team at MD Crash a call right away. We all know the cost of medical bills, lost wages, and pain and suffering can all add up quickly and potentially put you in a bad financial place. If you want a team that will handle your case, big or small, and just give you some peace of mind, save this number now, 855-MD-CRASH. That's 855-632-7274. Be sure to follow them on Facebook for some fun giveaways, including gift cards to some really cool restaurants in the Baltimore area. Hi, Scott. So we're going to talk Ravens.
Before we do that real quick, I'm just going to point out that our Terps BS bird has apparently challenged you to a one-on-one in basketball and wants to live stream it. Who's watching?
Well, I'm down.
I'm watching.
One on none, my friend.
I'll ref it.
That is one on none. I might be fat. I'll still slam it. I'll still throw down right on your forehead. We got it. One on one. I'm with it.
We got it. We might have to make this work after this corona stuff dies down. We might have to do this.
We'll set it up. We'll make it happen. Ah, man. But, yeah, so the NFL sent out notification the other day to all 32 teams that the facilities are going to be able to open up today, actually,
yeah,
as long as they follow local and state guidelines issued by their individual state. Now, it's all to do about nothing, really. I mean, the Ravens, Dick Cass came out the other day and said the Ravens aren't opening just because with everything that Governor Hogan has put out and everything that he's released, they haven't opened up enough. The Ravens are still considered non-essential.
Right.
So none of the coaches, none of the, you know, the players or anything can report. Part of that is a restriction that the NFL has put into place as far as the players not being able to report and the coaches not being able to report, just to keep the competitive balance fair. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be fair if
one team can report and another can't. Yeah, exactly.
Right, exactly. So that's good on the NFL's part for stepping up and doing that. But really, this announcement doesn't mean a whole lot of anything other than now some of the, maybe the you know, the front office and some of the personnel has a different location to go to do their virtual chats, because that's all they're going to be doing is virtual chats with their players in a different area.
Yeah, I mean, that's it allows you to open up and to technically really truly start the NFL conversation on the season, right? You can't do all the things you might normally, you're able to start, you know, you can start doing more Zoom calls with, you know, talking playbook, things like that. I'm sure if you're doing that, Patriots have half their staff figuring out how to hack your account. Right. But yeah, it's one of those things that when I saw it and then they came out with the additional, like, oh, you need to follow the state guidelines as well. I'm like, we ain't seeing the Ravens for another two months if we're lucky. You know, the way that the restrictions have been. And today, it annoys the crap out of me. All you jerk-offs that want to go off to Ocean City just because it opened. By the way, we had a huge spike. Let's not forget, our governor said he was willing to shut down the state again.
Yeah.
If we had major spikes and they sustained, well, we just took a step in that direction because we had our highest in the states since all this has happened. The highest increase in positive tests. Now, I know we're doing more testing and all that.
I was going to say, part of that is we're doing more testing, and then part of it is just the idiots going out there and being stupid. Yeah. I mean, that, for lack of a better term, that's essentially what they're doing right
now. If any of those lead to beds, that's where we got to worry about it. But hopefully right. No Ravens are on that, you know, and that's these protocols of not having them come in are ultimately – you know, it's for their protection. These are high-paid athletes, as much as, you know, sometimes they whine about money. They're high-paid athletes. They're there to entertain us. And the NFL has kind of got it right in a sense that they know people are itching for live sports. But if they're going to do it, they're going to do it right. And they're going to get it right.
And, you know, this is right around where everything starts to ramp up for the NFL, right? This is where you start talking about, next week or 2 weeks? I think it was May 25th. It's supposed to be the first week of OTAs, right? This is that critical time where, you know, the rookies get a chance to come in, dive into the playbook, and coaches can kind of evaluate, take an early glimpse of what these guys are going to look like. That doesn't sound like that's going to happen. May 25th, there's just no way that that's happening. So you can pretty much kiss OTAs goodbye. And then right behind that, you got mini camps that are supposed to be mid-June. I don't know about you, but even mid-June at this point, I don't see happening.
Well, that's why I made the statement that I did. Like, if we're lucky to see these guys actually truly reporting in 2 months, I really truly feel that that's the case. I know that everybody wants the state to reopen. I want state to reopen. I want us to not have to do these goddamn remote shows because they're a pain in the ass. Like, I am ready to be done with it. But at the same time, I understand it. And I appreciate what the NFL is doing as far as protecting their product. Because let's be real. That is exactly what they're doing. You have one of these, I hate to say it, right? But the NBA learned the hard way that they had a bunch of players, some of them bigger time players, get it and wind up having a problem. With these guys, this could be the season, and God forbid you're the first sport to do this, get it wrong, have somebody get sick, and unfortunately, knock on wood, pass because of it, you'll never recover.
That's kind of why I'm optimistic, right? Because you're slowly starting to see sports make their way back in. We talked about it for the last couple of weeks, the KBO, you know, starting to work its way back in. You saw NASCAR this past weekend, stepped race in front of no fans and that kind of thing.
UFC has been going.
Yeah, you're starting to see some of these sports put their foot in the water and just kind of see what happens, right? So I like that for the NFL prospect, because I think if they can learn anything from these other sports over the next couple of weeks, you know, taking the risk and seeing what kind of precautions and procedures that they're all using and what's working and what's not, I feel like this is a good educational experience for the NFL, where they'll be able to translate that to their game and how they'll, if there is going to be fans, how that'll translate to potential fan experience, or if there's going to be no fan base, how does that logistically work?
Yeah, you know, and Steven brings up a good point on Facebook. He says WWE has been doing it, but WWE got the pass in Florida to be considered essential, you know, for, and they, I think they did it the right way, because the way they were able to do it, they did it essential for mental health is basically what they said, is because they were providing entertainment. It provided some people with consistency. They were able to work around that. But at the same time, they're limiting how many people are in there and how many people are in the area at one time. They're going through and there's no fans, right? It's all production based. So that's what you're finding a lot with all of these. And I think maybe WWE actually set the tone with it by saying, hey, you can do this safely and still get the entertainment value while still getting the sport in.
WWE and UFC for that matter.
Yes, exactly.
UFC's done the same thing.
UFC struggled with it at first because they were, we're gonna still do a fan. No, they couldn't do it. Like they realized that it was gonna be a financial disaster to go do it on an island, like they were originally planning. But they got the workarounds, they got the right states, all that kind of stuff. You can do that, but to your point, Maryland being a little bit tighter of a state on everything, we know Governor Hogan is the leader of the National Governors Association. He's the president.
Right.
So for him, he wants to set the tone. Of course, he wants to be the strictest. And of course, we're going to be the strictest. It's led to some good stuff. Tighter restrictions, which are more pain. But I think things like this, if we continue to see that, maybe to your point, July, mid to late July.
Yeah, that's training camp is probably the first sign of life that I see for the NFL. I don't see the NFL risking it. Definitely not for OTAs in a couple weeks. I definitely don't see them doing even mini camps in mid-June. I really think if the NFL is going to try to start the season, the regular season, preseason, all of that on time, they'll have to have something in place and ready to go for training camp. If they're not ready to go for training camp in July, that means the season gets pushed back, because they're not, as much as they want to get back on the field and they want to make sure that the season's not interrupted and all that stuff, they're not going to be naive and say, hey, we're going to just go jump right into the regular season without any warmups, without any practice. I mean, that's why there is a preseason, It's to get these guys conditioned and ready to play, to lower the risk of injury, all that. They're not going to just jump right into a regular season and hope that everything sticks.
And if you're not doing it with fans, that's the other thing, right? If you're not doing it with fans, the TV deals are going to be there when the NFL's, you know, ready to go out, whether fans are there or not. The TV deals are going to be there. So the owners are going to make a little bit of their money. And I know that's their concern, is they're not making as much money as they would normally, especially without fans there. And you don't have ticket sales and, you know, concession sales and all that stuff. But I think NFL owners are some of the smarter owners in pro sports, because they look at things from a profit standpoint, but they also look at things from a fan standpoint. They look at things from a player standpoint, right? We've seen some holdouts with the NFLPA before, but it's not as often as we see with, like, the MLB.
Right.
The NHL kind of has it somewhat right a little bit with that, but that's because they've mimicked, to an extent, what the NFL has done. So I really think the owners are playing a huge role in here, that if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. We're not going to put these multi-million-dollar contracts at risk, because let's be real, you get these guys out here too early, something bad happens, you have a risk at that point of the Players Association going, you know what? We told you guys you were rushing it. We didn't want to do this. Lawsuit against all 32 NFL teams.
Steven says, put blow-up dolls in the stands with football jerseys on. Don't give the Korean League any ideas. They're already putting cardboard cutouts out there. I wouldn't be surprised if next week we saw blow-up dolls out there. But all right, so in all seriousness, let's take a look at, obviously, this whole thing is going to affect the league equally, because the NFL is going to make it that way, right? We talked about that. That's why they're not allowing players and they're not allowing coaches. But let's be selfish and focus on the Ravens, because after all, we are a Ravens show, right? And what does this mean for with the shortage of prep time? How is this going to affect the roster? What are maybe some hurdles that some guys are going to have to get over? Because let's face it, the Ravens have 31 rookies coming in this year. When you count the draft picks and you count all the undrafted free agents that they signed, 31 rookies, right? The NFL is one of the toughest transitions, I think, from the collegiate level to the professional level, right? You think about Major League Baseball, you don't get drafted into the major leagues. You get drafted into the minor leagues to work your way up to, you know, to kind of learn. So your time in learning at the NFL as a rookie is very small. It's a very small window. We talked about it. OTAs, mini camps, and training camp. Well, two of those things are probably out the window. So these 31 rookies, especially the undrafted guys who the Ravens have always been really good at finding those diamonds in the rough, they're going to have a very, very small window to show their value and to try to make a roster spot with this team.
You better prove your value quick. Simple as that. Like there ain't no sugarcoating it. You better prove your value quick, and you better be working the way that you're seeing Hollywood Brown work. And I know we're talking about rookies, but have you seen the videos he posted of him working out?
Oh yeah. That's what we were talking about last week. Like the effort that this guy is putting in, you know, last year we saw a lot of videos of Lamar working out in the off season, throwing to his receivers and all that stuff. We're seeing that same kind of work ethic from his number one target in Hollywood Brown now, right? His best friend, the guy on the team that he's going to go to. Now, granted, we all know the relationship and obviously the connection that he has with Mark Andrews, but when you're talking about wide receiver production, you've got his best friend who's having one of the, in my opinion, one of the most productive off seasons that I've seen in the NFL out of anybody. I mean, I've been watching Twitter and looking for, you know, workout videos. That doesn't mean that these guys aren't putting in the work. Not everybody puts all their work out there for everybody to see on social media. I get that. But the added muscle, we talked about Hollywood last week, going from maybe 155 last year.
Beast.
Yeah. To maybe 175 this year, that extra 20 pounds. And it's not a bad 20 pounds.
It didn't even, I mean, it doesn't slow him down. I saw him throw, I've seen the videos of him with the jugs machine. He's the one putting the ball in the jugs machine and then tracks it down. I'd love to try it. I know I can't do it, but I'd be interested to try it just to see how well I could compare. But I know I'm not going to be anywhere near close to that ball when it comes time to it. But it just gives you a feel for how fast he truly is. Even with that added muscle, this guy's able to outrun a jugs machine. That is impressive, right? And then the videos you've been seeing of him in his driveway, catching him one-handed. It's all muscle, and you can see him as – it's not just catching it, right? Yeah. The cool thing I love about this video is you can see him focusing on actually his hands and his hand strength in that video just by him catching it and going, right? He's giving that little grunt, gives a little pull in, and that's where he's throwing it back. He's using his upper body at that point. He's not, some people are saying, oh, it looks like he's throwing it back wimpy. The dude is, if you watch, he doesn't move his feet.
Right. He's throwing it all arm.
He's throwing it all arm, which is just continuing to build all this body muscle up here.
Yep.
Because I bet you what he knows is what we've all been saying. He's going to have to start blocking at some point.
Troy, Kamal, appreciate you guys tuning in, man. Good to see you guys. We talked about the rookies and how they're going to be impacted by this shortage of time. But even when you start looking at some of these other guys, like some of these second-year guys that are going into their deals, right? Take a look at Jalen Ferguson, obviously, right? Yeah. So last year, Pernell McPhee went down with the injury, right? And kind of forced Jalen Ferguson into a starting role and a little bit more exposure than they probably wanted to give him at that point last year. But hey, when one guy goes down, it's next man up. That's just kind of the way that the NFL works, right? And sports in general. Jalen, you know, struggled in the beginning, right? Definitely struggled against setting the edge against the run, right? Did okay. Still needs to work. He's a one-trick pony when it comes to pass rush. He still needs to work on his pass rush moves. But he did show signs of improvement. Now, we did bring Pernell McPhee back. But I think this year, second year, we were going to see a heavier snap count for Jalen Ferguson just because he's going to be that outside linebacker of the future on that side. So obviously not having the training time and having the time to kind of get into the playbook and work with a veteran like Pernell McPhee, who's now back from injury, right, who can actually go out there and be with him. I think this severely impacts his potential growth.
Yeah, you can't – when you have a guy who's really truly fighting for a position like he is, to ask him to say, okay, now you have less time to fight for that position, that starting position, if that's what you really want – that's a lot to ask, but to that same point, that's where what he's doing in the offseason is going to dictate what he's able to do when it comes time to step up, right?
Right.
You know, you get some of these guys that maybe are like, I don't have to report. I don't need to worry about it as much. That shows you the mentality, and this team is not going to be about that mentality moving forward. That is not going to be an acceptable mentality. The mentality is all these guys are working hard off. You don't have to be posting videos. But you better be working just as hard as they are.
You better be
ready. Harder. Exactly.
At the end of the day, I could care less what you're doing on social media, but you better be putting in the work. You better be ready.
So one guy I wanted to ask you about, since we're talking about this, that is, I think it's going to have a huge effect on him, is Justice Hill, right? Because we're running into this four-headed monster now at running back. I know what my initial thoughts are with him, but I'm curious, what is your take? How does this affect him in that competition to an extent? Because right now, there's a potential three-way competition between Gus, him, and Dobbins.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the Ravens are more than likely, I would say 90-95% sure that they're going to carry four running backs going into this year. So I don't think he's at risk for like losing a job or potentially getting cut or anything like that. But this obviously hinders his ability to show the team the growth that he's had from year one to year two, right? This doesn't give him that window to work with Lamar, work with the new offensive lineman, right? I'd made this bold prediction a few weeks ago that maybe three people, because Lamar is included in this, are going to break 1,000 yards rushing this year. We might not even see that now, right? I didn't even wrap my mind around this whole thing of kind of saving each back so you don't run out of gas towards the end of the year, kind of like Mark Ingram did when, you know, he got the injury, he didn't have the gas at the end of the tank, and that's ultimately it's part of what cost us that game against the Titans. Obviously, Derrick Henry was 90% of it. The other part of it was the fact that we just couldn't get moving on the ground, which we had been doing all year.
Right.
So maybe they use this four-headed monster and distribute the ball a little bit more evenly amongst these backs. But I do think before the end of the year, Dobbins will show his value in both the running and passing game because he's an underrated pass catcher out of the backfield that I think towards the end of the year, you'll start to see him get the lion's share of carries even over Mark Ingram, I think, just because I think his fit in this offense is going to be great. So it does impact Justice Hill. I just don't think it impacts him as much as it might impact some of these other second-year guys.
I agree with that. The only thing I would add to that is I think you see, because I agree, Dobbins is going to show his value a little bit more. I think you wind up seeing Justice Hill. He's still going to get some carries at running back, but I think you see him make a little bit of a transition with that speed that he's got to the special teams, right? I think maybe you start seeing him field the ball a little bit more. He can be shifty, gets you a few extra yards. We really don't have a guy that you can depend on right now.
They used him a little bit on special teams last year. I didn't really see the expected explosion that I saw out of him because with his 40 time and some of the runs that I saw him make at Oklahoma State, I thought he'd have that kind of explosive ability to be an effective special teamers. Doesn't mean that he can't be. I'm just saying in a little bit of action that he got back there last year, just didn't see it. But
to his defense, I think he also put on a little bit weight, expecting a little bit more weight load at running back. Obviously, they don't necessarily fully go that route. He gets some carries at running back. But if I'm him, the way that I'm approaching this, as much as I want to be a running back and claim that I'm a running back, I am shedding a little bit of weight of that I may have put on in anticipation before the draft. And now I'm saying, all right, I'm going to make this team as a guy that can be both a running back and a guy that can be explosive on the special teams, right? Because I have a feeling he started to put on weight. He started to build up. That was one of the I don't think you can call it a knock, but there was not as much power as you get out of a power running back, right? He's more of a shifty style. We've talked about that.
Right.
So for me, if I'm him, I'm making that adjustment and saying, if I'm making this team, as much as I don't want to make this team as a special teams guy, I can do both things. I can play both portions of this game because we all know how much the Ravens in the past have valued utility guys, right?
Yeah, that's very true.
So I really think that's, if I'm him, that's the approach that I'm going. But so kind of wanted to talk to you, too, about another guy that I think really is going to play, you know, this plays a huge role on his ability to jump in here, is a guy that we were not very impressed with last year when we did see little bits of him. You know, he's obviously expected to kind of take over potentially for Yanda with him leaving. It's going to be Ben Powers. Right now he's got to fight out Fluker for that job, which I think Fluker is going to get it, if in all reality, but he has less time to prove what he's worth.
Yeah. So Ben Powers was interesting to me because he's the big unknown. I don't think we know what we have in Ben Powers. There's a lot of comparisons to his attitude and his ethic and his work ethic and stuff like that to that of Yanda. He's not anywhere near the type of player that Yanda is, but I think he has that same grittiness about him, his toughness about him. But the question was, all right, how do the Ravens feel about Ben Powers? And it feels like this entire time that that's been a secret. We haven't known how the Ravens feel about Ben Powers. And I feel like this draft might tell us a little bit about how they feel about Ben Powers. I mean, they go out and they get Ben Breedson out of Michigan, and then they get the guard Phillips out of Mississippi State. So they take two offensive linemen, which they needed. We talked about that prior to the draft. They needed it for depth purposes. But then the big head scratcher to me was, even after those two draft picks, you go out and you bring in a veteran like Fluker, who I think Fluker comes in and is the day one starter at right guard.
Not to forget, didn't they get one or two guys in the undrafted market? I mean, I know those guys aren't making a role, but
yeah, they picked up a couple of guys in the undrafted market, right? But so, you know, look, there could be a complete shakeup on the offensive line. We talked about Bradley Bozeman last week. Maybe I think he potentially moves over to center this year. How really healthy is Matt Scurry? He's still working his way back from the injury. Pat McCary, I thought, did an admirable job filling in at center for Matt Scurry when he went down. But McCary is also naturally a guard over a center. Same thing with, like I said, Bozeman. Bozeman's more of a natural center than he is a left guard.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of moving pieces here. But, yeah, I mean, Ben Powers is obviously impacted by this, too. He doesn't get a chance to get out there and showcase what he can do. On the other side of the line is a guy that, like, you almost forget about him because you don't hear anything about him. And he was a draft pick last year, and that was Daylon Mack.
Right.
You know, this is a guy that was supposed to be the heir apparent to the potential loss of Michael Pierce or the potential loss of Brandon Williams if they ended up cutting him to save salary cap, right? This is going to be the guy, the stopgap guy, to kind of fill the need there.
Yeah.
But then the Ravens go out and do everything that they do with the additions through free agency with Calais Campbell and Wolf, and they kind of restructure their defensive line from this run stuffing defensive, you know, beast up front with Pierce and Williams to this very solid defensive line that can create pressure from the middle. Right. And then they go out and draft two guys. They get Matabuke, who's a huge value, I think, in the third round. I think he immediately jumps over Mack as far as the pecking order. Could even be a starter come midseason this year on the defensive line. Then you get Broderick Washington. I think he was like kind of the biggest question mark. Some people say that there was really good value getting him in the fifth round.
Right.
But you add those two pieces on top of the extra pieces that they got in free agency. Now, I know we lost Pierce. We traded Warmly, and Pecco retired. So there were some holes to be filled, but Daylon Mack, a guy that was just kind of lost in the shuffle, obviously this hurts him too.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about him, you know, nicknamed Sack Daddy. I mean, we talked about him, or no, I'm sorry, that's Chandler Ferguson. No, it was Mac, right?
Mac was Mac Truck, I think.
Mac Truck, that's what it was. I couldn't remember which one was which.
Steven said Mac might not even make the team this year with so much. We're so deep on defensive line, and that's very true.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of to your point is we have so much going on right now that on the defensive side of the ball, we don't even know what to do with half these guys, right? You have guys that you expected to be producers that you, for all intents and purposes, could wind up cutting. And right. I don't know that Mac has really proved enough that somebody's going to pick him up. Somebody might try and take him for their practice squad.
He hasn't proven anything. Right. He hasn't had a chance to prove anything. So he might be, depending upon the pecking order of how things are and hopefully everybody stays healthy, you know, through the start of the season, he could be a guy they try to stuff on the practice squad. Because I don't know how many teams out there would, you know, jump the gun on picking him up and putting him on a roster because the guy's got to play right immediately if they take him. So I don't know. That's a guy that kind of gets lost in the shuffle. Maybe he's a guy that gets cut. I don't know. The Ravens usually don't give up on draft picks that fast or that early. But again, just a guy that is a head scratcher to me that I think can got to get lost in the fold.
Yeah.
And then on staying, you know, with the theme of guys getting lost in the fold, do the Ravens carry three quarterbacks this year? You know, last year was kind of an anomaly. They drafted Trace McSorley.
Yeah.
Right. And in the beginning, I'd say the first preseason game and through training camp didn't look great, but then he started showing progression and showed that he can run this offense later in the preseason as things started going, and the Ravens ended up keeping him on the roster. So they're in a position right now with RG3. RG3's in his last year of his deal with us. He was signed a 2-year deal. This is his last year of the deal.
Right.
Do the Ravens keep RG3 and Trace McSorley? They brought in yet another arm, a guy that fits in a lot better to
what we're trying to do. Yeah, that was right. Going to be my question. Like, you know, it's not just at that point to me, it's not just Trace, right? And RG3, but where does this guy fit in? Because this is the guy that beat Lamar. Everybody's making a big deal out of it. Beat Lamar in high school for the high school title, right? And comes in, and everything that they're saying is he's almost a little bit more plug and play style because of his style of play with Lamar than Trace would be. So does that starts to hurt Trace idea? The idea of him, you know, if they do carry three QBs, is it Trace? Could this other guy come in and beat him out because Trace doesn't have the ability to do it? Trace has the year up his sleeve, but let's be real. What experience did Trace get?
To that point is exactly why we're talking about this, right? Even if this guy you might quote unquote think fits the system a little bit better, and when you look at what he did in college, yeah, it might excite you a little bit more than what Trace McSorley was able to do. But Trace McSorley also has an entire year in this offense, right? An entire year of experience. And with this shortage of time frame that we're going to have players to be able to get ready, does this undrafted guy come in? Hunley, I think his name is. I can't think right now.
Yeah, I can't think of his name.
Can't think of his name. But he comes in. Does he have the time to make enough of an impression to supersede McSorley on the roster? Yeah. I don't know. But again, do the Ravens even carry three quarterbacks this year? Do they get rid of McSorley, and do they get rid of the undrafted guy altogether? I don't know. There's a lot of question marks there because – now, I know the roster is expanding, but I think one of those spots is probably going to be occupied by that fourth running back, which we didn't carry last year. And then I think the other spot is probably going to be the offensive line, just because we have a decent amount of depth there. And I don't think there's anybody there. Ben Powers is not going to be cut. That's a guy that we just haven't seen him get the opportunity yet.
Yeah. Well, and before, because I know we want to, it kind of leads me towards a free agency question I have for you, but one of the things that I wanted to get your take on before we move on is going to be a guy like Emmon Marshall, right?
Amon Marshall.
I call him Emmon, but Amon Marshall. This guy's got – we already have depth here, right? We thought he had decent ability, but we've already got depth. You lost Carr. You're getting back young. Does he get just kind of thrown away here in the fold?
No. He'll make the roster. But again, he's another guy that isn't going to have a whole lot of time to be able to climb the depth chart. He's going to be a fringe potential practice squad guy, or, you know, one of the last guys to make the roster type thing. Another draft pick that was my head scratcher from last year, that, you know, did say we should draft a cornerback every year, you know, in the draft. I agree with that motto, but at the time that we picked him, I want to say he was a fourth or fifth round pick.
He was a fifth rounder.
Yeah. Okay. Fifth round pick. There were other guys out there that I thought were bigger needs at the time and there was nothing this guy showed me on tape that really excited me about his play. And then even the little bit that we did see him in training camp last year, still the same, not a whole lot that excited me about him. So he's definitely a guy that I think is impacted by this.
All right, fair enough. All right, so let's kind of move and switch gears here. We talked about the guys that are going to be affected by all this, but there's still some question marks, some potential holes, some things have been floated out there, right? We've got free agency. Are you ultimately, do you think the Ravens are done at free agency at this point, or can you see a move potentially happening? There's been some rumors floating out and somebody putting something out there that I don't even like him anyway, but he's putting out rumors that he thinks this is going to happen. But are we done in free agency?
No. Listen, no? We got about 10, I think, million under the cap once everything is all paid for, as far as like signing all your draft picks and all that. Okay. The Ravens typically will carry probably, I'd say, 5 of that into the start of the season. So they have a little bit of a cushion that if, you know, an injury happens or something, they've got money to be able to bring a free agent in, that kind of thing. So they'll probably have about 5 or 6 million, I'd say, somewhere in that range to spend. Are they going to go out and get, you know, a huge difference maker? No. But I think they can go out and get a couple of role guys, a couple of guys, some veterans that maybe don't need a whole lot of get ready time, don't need a whole lot of learning, you know, like a lot of these rookies do, especially again with this shortened training camp and everything. You know, Clay Matthews is still out there. If people aren't, you know, if there isn't a team that's going to ante up and pay him the money that he wants, maybe he's a guy that we bring in.
Well, I mean, let's look at Eric DaCosta too. I mean, look at the genius moves that he made in the middle of the year last year.
Nick, some of these AB, guys. No, stop.
I laughed at that when I saw it.
Thought we were going to get through the entire Ravens segment without bringing it up.
Of course, Nick comes in and he immediately brings it up. Mm-hmm. But no, so
good,
like
you, Nick.
when it comes to it, right, Eric DaCosta is good at finding diamonds in the rough, right? And I'm not even going to say diamonds. I'll rough it up a little bit. I'll say rubies in the rough, right? Because here's my explanation. LJ Fort is not a diamond in the rough, right? He is a little bit more than serviceable. He's got good sideline to sideline speed. He was able to go get this guy off his couch and go get him. Stuff like that is what he's been able to do. Is he's been able to go find.
But that's also that like between Bynes and Jahyd Ward and LJ Fort, these were all guys that they used that 4 or 5 million that I was talking about that they kind of carry into the season. That's why if we're just talking about, I'm not talking about that. Like I think those moves will happen as the course of the year happens. I'm more talking about prior to the season kicking off, that extra maybe $5-6 million that they're going to have to spend.
I guess what I'm saying is now, you know, Eric DaCosta last year, how much of that offseason did he really have as the true GM? Right? How much was Ozzie's influence there? And, hey, what does Ozzie think, right? Because Ozzie was still around.
Yeah, he's still around now.
Right. He's still around now. But I think the I'm not going to say the leash on DaCosta is a little looser, but he's probably maybe not going to Ozzie a little bit more. He's trusting his instincts a little bit more. He's able to make those decisions. He's got a full offseason now under his belt. He's able to kind of come through and make these decisions that he made during the season. So I'm thinking he can pick up some guys before the season even starts, just like he did in season last year. So while he'll do that in season, he's going to be able to do some stuff in this offseason. I agree with you. I don't think they're done yet. One of the things that's been floated out there, and I mentioned this, the idea of, you know,
he should be Troy, but he's not.
The idea of, you know, we could have another pass rusher. We can have another wide receiver. We've already heard Nick Short's answer is go get AB on league minimum, which would never happen.
Right.
Jason Lockenfora.
All right, stop there. That's all I had to say.
I know. I said this earlier. I don't like the guy. I don't respect anything he usually has to say. But he's floating this idea out there of going and saying, oh, we can sign Cam Newton to replace RG3. You want to talk about a broken person?
Aye, aye, aye.
As far as RG3, yes. Was he maybe a little broken mentally when he came back and he's come back from injury because he felt slighted, he didn't get the chance to really come back. But you know what? He's been a great mentor. Cam Newton would not be good next to Lamar Jackson. It would actually be the exact opposite.
Cam Newton is not going to take a back seat to anybody. He would sit out this entire year or sit out until an opening happens where an injury happens or something like that before he ever signs a league minimum deal like a Jameis Winston did out in New Orleans or whatever. Cam's just not built that way. It's not going to happen. And the Ravens will, I just can't see the Ravens having any interest in him. I get it from a physical standpoint and how he would transition into this offense might work okay. It wouldn't be much of a difference between him and RG3 as far as like, as far as how they could operate the offense. Athletically, yes, I think Cam Newton is much more gifted than RG3 is, but I just don't think that the Ravens are even in that market right now. The quarterback of the future we have, right? We have locked up. Yeah. Hopefully that stays into place and we don't ever have to worry about anybody else coming onto the field.
I actually semi-agree with what Nick just said in Facebook. He said, bring Cap back before Cam.
Yeah, well, Kaepernick, in my opinion, like, he's deserved an opportunity. That's a whole nother discussion for another day. I'm not even going to go down that road. But
talent-wise, I will take Kaepernick over Cam every day of the week and twice on Sunday.
I don't know. I mean, if you're talking about winning football games, no. Kaepernick hasn't thrown a football in, what, like a decade now? It's been forever since he's played in the NFL. I get that he should have the opportunity to play, and he should have had it years ago. But at this point, if we're talking about purely winning football games, I like my chances better with Cam Newton than I would Colin Kaepernick right now.
What's
right
Cam's now. Success rate mentally and physically?
I mean, yes. I get everything that Cam is, but I think success-wise, I think Cam Newton would give us a better trajectory.
Brian chimed in. He said, why Cam only one good season and he dabbed his way down from there?
Y'all on crack. I will take Cam all day, every day.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. Like I said, I don't see him doing that. And I don't see the Ravens going after him. It's just not an interest. I don't think the Ravens will even scratch the surface on, but who knows, man, if he decided to take a minimum deal and the Ravens want to turn their back on RG3, then okay. I just don't see the Ravens operating that way, but
all right,
we'll see.
We both agree. We don't like the idea of Cam coming here. Right. All right.
Right.
What about us getting, you know, a spot that I've been saying for the past few weeks, I know you've kind of talked about it and hinted at it a little bit. What about a third tight end, right? We go a lot of we went a lot of three tight end sets last year. Now you don't necessarily have that luxury unless you really like what Breland brings to the table out of Oregon. Could we see them make a free agency move when it comes to tight end?
Josh, did you pop in just to say, did we sign?
I'm pretty sure.
Thanks for that. Yeah. We just went through the same thing with Nick. Thanks, buddy. Good to see you, man. No, like I definitely think that tight end is a consideration as far as free agents go. Who might get cut? There's really not a ton of free agent tight ends out there that excite me. I don't think the Ravens are going to go out and sign any of the current free agents. But if there is a camp casualty, you know, somebody gets cut or that kind of thing, and the right piece opens up, potentially. I mean, I do think that the kid Breland and the other kid that they brought in as undrafted free agents show some value, but again, they're going to have a very limited stage, right? And I think the Ravens are in a win now mentality. I think if they can go out and find a veteran third tight end on the cheap for $1 million or $2 million a year that gets cut by another team, there's teams out there. I think the Bears legit, no shit. I think the Bears have 12 tight ends on their roster right now.
I know it's pretty high of how many guys they have.
They have a ton of tight ends on their rosters. No way in hell they're going to carry all those tight ends. There's a couple of teams out there that are built like that. I think the Browns have a boatload of tight ends on their roster right now. So there are some pieces that could potentially open up. And you got to make up for that loss of production from Hayden Hurst.
I do think
the ball is going to be spread around a little bit more to the wide receivers that the tight ends won't see as heavy a workload. Because honestly, if you go and look at the stats, the tight end group they had more receiving yards than the wide receiver core, right? I think we see that shift this year. But again, this offense is built around that run heavy, you know, type of front, having multiple tight end formations out there. So I do think that that's an area that the Ravens could absolutely poke around.
So
with.
Interestingly enough, James says he's available. He just needs $1 million to play.
I hear you. Delanie Walker. That's a good name that's out there. Yeah. I think he's a free agent, right? That could be a guy, a nice receiving target, a multifaceted, is a pretty good blocker as well.
But is he past his prime to be effective at this point?
Now, again, he's a third tight end, right? You just need a guy that can go out there that has sure hands, that can learn the offensive system pretty quickly, and that's willing to throw his body in front of a guy and throw a block when asked, right? And I think Delanie Walker would be a good fit. I didn't even think about him being out there, so that's a great point.
I mean, I think the really question comes down to what do you have when Breeland comes to camp, right? When you're finally able to see Breeland, what is
like
he able
Breeland.
To do?
A lot I like of people, Breeland, a very small sample size because he got hurt, you know, in Oregon. He was on a very good pace. He was leading the college football in tight end production as far as receiving yards and touchdowns
go. He was on pace to set like a college record, right? If I remember correctly.
It early on in the year, but then he got hurt. And,
right.
You know, who knows what would have happened for the rest of the year. But, again, he just doesn't have a whole lot of time. So do the Ravens maybe stash him on a practice squad and go out and sign that veteran so that he can kind of learn the offense over the first couple of weeks? And maybe a guy like a Delanie Walker or a camp cut from another team comes in and gives us that immediate impact for the first quarter of the season.
By the way, you're going to
that's a good spot. I think the Ravens will be in for a free agent.
You're going to love this because James says I have great hands. And then Josh calls him out and says, show us the tape.
Your hands are made for tossing dough.
I'd pay $1 million to see that tape.
His hands have got to be soft, right? Tossing around all that pizza dough all day, they got to be soft.
Nah, he's a meat man. He tosses that meat.
Oh, whoa. That took a turn.
Wow. Anyway. All right, so.
Speaking of taking turns.
I was going to say, let's go controversial here. Go ahead, buddy. You take it away.
Yeah, so I was, like, debating prior to the show whether we were going to bring this up or not, but I feel like
We have to.
You can't not bring it up, right? So the NFL owners are going to vote on a resolution that would improve a team's draft position if it hires a person of color as head coach or general manager, per sources. Currently, right now in the league, there are only 2 African-American GMs and 4 head coaches of color, which is an all-time low for the last like 17 years.
Right.
Right. Really, since they put in the Rooney Rule. The Rooney Rule went into effect in 2003, which enforced teams to have to interview minorities for these positions.
Right.
Before I dissect this thing, what's your take? What was your immediate response when you saw this?
My immediate response was like, I get it, right? Like,
you get what?
Really? You don't get it? You don't get what they're trying to do here? They're trying to have equal opportunity, right?
Okay.
All right. Yeah. Well, good. We're on the same page. That was going to get really ugly real quick, right?
Okay. I get what they're trying to do.
Right.
I get what they're trying to do because obviously this is a problem and it's been a problem for a very long time.
Yeah.
But to incentivize teams for doing so is completely the wrong way to go about it.
It's a ridiculous way to do it, right? Like that's asking for problems and lawsuits down the road, like beyond anybody's business.
If I was an African-American or if I was a person of color, however you want to phrase that, there's no right way to do it, I guess. I would be offended by this. And you don't think that there's these like scheming people, and I'm not even going to throw names out there, right? But organizations and people within organizations that don't look at this as an opportunity to improve their team draft stock first and foremost before they even consider who it is that they're hiring. Right. They're just looking to potentially reap the benefits of moving up the draft board and getting a better player. So they're going to turn in the card on a person of color for all the wrong reasons.
I was
going to
say there's also not a lot of details on this. So that's where I'm a little hesitant on this, because the big thing that I think, and when I say hesitant, I'm hesitant on my response. Right. The big thing with this is if this is set up in such a way that you can hire a head coach, get the draft pick and fire him a week into the season, which not putting it past the NFL in this situation. That is absolutely the worst thing you could ever have happen. But to your point, there's some organizations out there that would exactly do that.
I know. And it's sad, but that's just the way it would work.
Yeah.
And like I said, I just think that I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I know people are beating it up all over social media. And I think everything that needs to be said has kind of already been said by the public. But I just think to Josh's point, it's a slap in the face. I would take this completely in the wrong tense. Like, I get the premise behind it, and I think they have good intentions, but this is absolutely the wrong way to go about
great
it.
Point,
it is not a good look.
Great point by Troy. Wouldn't the greatest incentive simply be winning? Put the best candidate in the best position.
And that's, morally, like, that's the right thing to do, right? That's the right thing to say. But when you look at the statistics of it, it's not happening that way currently, right? That's the problem. And they're trying to fix this in a very unethical type of way.
I'm going to ask you a question because it kind of got brought up here in the chat room, right? Nick replied to something. Brian said, what the hell happened to the best person for the job? And Nick commented and said, like Kaepernick, who has been blackballed. Yeah. Right. There's that argument, right? That it's not just at the GM and head coach level, but this is down at the quarterback level. And right. I think they're trying to work their way up and trying to get that incentivization, right? To say, hey, follow the Rooney rule, right? Hey, we'll give you a little bit if you follow it. But that's not how you do it, right? You gotta these teams that are being so stingy about this whole situation, and stingy is a bad word to put, but I have no other way to describe it. And when you're being like that, you're putting yourself in a bad position, right? I love the fact, partially because he's a hometown guy, right? But Eric Berry going up to Cleveland and doing his thing up there, his GM up there, awesome on him. And I hope, for the sake of our Browns buddies over there at Big Play, I hope he turns that organization around and proves right. that he knows what he's talking about, he knows what he's doing, and he is the best guy for the job, regardless of the color of his skin.
Right.
And that's what it comes down to.
And the thing is, like, if you're that naive to think that there aren't people out there that are fighting for these positions, that want these positions, that are people of color, just look at the statistics of football. I think it's somewhere close to like 75 or 80% of the players in the league are African American.
Right.
70 to 80% of the league. There are currently two out of the 32 teams. There are two GMs. There are four head coaches out of the 32. So the difference in percentages are massive. And then it doesn't even stop there. When you look at the like offensive coordinators, there are two, Byron right. Leftwich and Eric Bieniemy out in Kansas City, who Eric Bieniemy, I mean, people are screaming his name from bridges that he needs to be the next head coach in line and that he should be getting opportunities, and he's not. There's something wrong with that.
Yeah.
And I get, like I said, there needs to be something that happens, but this just isn't it. This is the wrong way to go about it.
Yeah, Troy asked, does Ed Reed still coach? He's wanting to. I don't think he is right now.
Actually, I think he just got a job with the University of Miami.
But he's not doing it in the NFL. Yeah, you're right. He's overseeing a department of theirs at the University of Miami. But right. he's not a coach in the NFL, right? A guy like him could very easily get a job with his resume, even if it is a, you know, maybe he's not a defensive coordinator yet, right? Maybe he's a guy that is your DB coach and then winds up becoming a defensive coordinator. Some of the thing is do these guys want that, right? You know, the players, when it comes to players, do they want to then go and become coach? Some of them do. And it really just comes down to you got to get the right person for the right job. I think the question then starts to become, you know, I think what people are kind of saying with the incentive side of things is incentivized to get more. So then the question becomes, okay, where's the balance? Right.
Right.
That's a whole different conversation. That's what people need to understand. How much is enough is a whole different conversation.
That's a whole
there's
another
not
conversation.
Enough at all.
You will never have a 50-50 split unless you force it to be a 50-50 split. The balance in structure and just the opportunities out there aren't, it just won't happen that way. But it can't be this far skewed. It can't. Now, I know people are out there throwing names around like Ray Lewis and Ed Reed because we know these guys and we know what they were in the huddle and we knew what they meant to this team. But Ray Lewis isn't putting his name out there to be a head coach.
He ain't trying to be a head coach, no.
I'll be honest with you, Ray Lewis is one of those guys that if he wanted to be a coach somewhere,
he'd already had it. Yeah.
He'd have a job. He'd have a shot. He's one of those guys, right? But who was Eric Bieniemy before he was a defensive coordinator? I mean, an offensive coordinator. Like, nobody really knew who he was, right? Ray Lewis is the guy that if he wanted to go out there and have that job, he would. But Ray Lewis is doing fine without coaching right now. You know, Ed Reed, he dabbled in it a little bit. He was a DB coach, I think, with Buffalo, and then I think the Jets even for a little bit. I can't remember. He dabbled around a couple different jobs. I think he'll get back into it eventually at the NFL level. Ed's an interesting dude, man. He flies by marches to the beat of his own drum, right? Like, if he doesn't like something, he doesn't hold his mouth shut.
Nope.
He's not a corporate kind of guy. He's never been that kind of guy. So there are certain personalities, as great as they were as players, and as much as we know about how smart they are, doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be the greatest coaches or that they would be the greatest organizational fits.
Yeah.
But the percentages are skewed far too.
They're far too skewed. And Deshaun brings up, he's talking about Cam, going back to Cam for a second. He said, is Cam going to get a job soon? Why is all the talent just being ignored?
That's a great point.
But I think James actually replied to it really well. I don't think it's necessarily the talent. It's the fact that he can't stay healthy and stay on the field. And I think mentally for him, a lot of people see him mentally and they question, is that the reason why everything is falling apart in North Carolina?
Let me ask you this. Tomorrow, Andrew Luck decides he wants to come back in the NFL. Do you think he gets a job within a couple of weeks? And this is a guy who had a ton of injuries in his career. Ultimately, why he retired.
I can't say.
I guarantee you.
In today's NFL, yes. I think you're right. I think.
Guarantee you, Andrew Luck comes back tomorrow. He's got a job within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Well before Cam Newton does.
But hold on. Because we're going down a rabbit hole here, and I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. But the one thing you're not factoring in here is the guy's apparent, and I say apparent, I'm going to put that in quotes, apparent mental state, right? Him in answering questions during a press conference. You watched Cam Newton answer questions during a press conference?
He's starting to sound a little bit more like AB. There's plenty of players in the NFL that are jackasses. White, black, yellow, doesn't matter.
I'm not disagreeing with that.
Still have a job. There's something to why Cam Newton hasn't gotten the opportunity. Cam Newton is a physical specimen. He won a league MVP. He took a team to a Super Bowl. No, he didn't win it, but he took his team to the Super Bowl. I understand he might not be now what he was five,
I was
going to
say, how long ago was that? Let's not forget about that.
I understand that. But you mean to tell me that Cam Newton isn't better than 31 other quarterbacks out there right now? That there's 31 other quarterbacks better than Cam Newton right now? No, I don't believe it. I don't.
I think that's a hard question to answer because you don't know what rookies bring to the table, right? You don't know what some of these guys can do. Let's not forget Tom Brady was what, a seventh round draft pick?
Okay.
They can come from anywhere. That's my point. With Cam
I don't know
Newton,
where you're going with this. I don't understand your point.
With Cam Newton has his physical talent. I think somebody just brought it up. Who's been carrying that team for the past few years?
Say it again.
Who's been carrying that team for the past few years?
Who? The Panthers?
Yeah.
I mean, the past 2 years, it's been Christian McCaffrey.
Exactly.
Okay.
Your running back's been carrying your team because your quarterback can't do anything.
He's been hurt. He has been hurt.
Right.
But what I'm saying is
he can't stay healthy.
He's proven that he's coming back healthy. That's the thing. If Cam Newton can't pass a physical and Cam Newton goes out there for a tryout and can't throw the fucking football and that comes out, Like, hey, Cam Newton can't throw the ball 15 yards down the field because his arm's still effed up. That's a whole nother topic. It doesn't become white or black. It doesn't become anything. It's legit.
I guess what my
Cam Newton has an issue.
What my point was, there's so many factors that you can't. This is that whole argument of player versus player from generation versus generation. There are so many different factors that factor in.
Josh, you're right on. That's where I think Cam Newton ends up.
Where's he saying?
He says Big Ben's not playing a full season. Big Ben, right? He's another guy.
Yeah.
Injury issues, right? And he's going to come back and get an opportunity.
But
he's
going to play. But Ben Roethlisberger, you're going to make this comparison, and I'm just going to go down this road since you went down this road. Ben Roethlisberger has proven himself time after time after
time
after time.
Ben Roethlisberger was trash last year before he got hurt.
He got hurt, the third week of the season? How can you say he's trash when he went three or 4 weeks?
He was terrible. Those first 3 or 4 weeks, I'm just saying, listen, we're going to keep going around and around and around.
We'll just agree on this.
We'll just agree to disagree on this. Cam Newton, he deserves an opportunity.
I'm not saying he doesn't deserve an opportunity by any means, but he needs to recognize that if that opportunity comes as a second-string quarterback, take it. Take it. Keep your talent going, because you see what happens when a guy steps away and isn't a second string and winds up having an issue.
All right, Scott, take a drink. Calm down. Calm your tits. It's the Liquor Stop Brew of the Week.
Calm my tits? Is that what you're talking
about? Calm your tits.
So this week,
what are you drinking on from Liquor Stop today?
This week's Brew of the Week from Liquor Stop is we've had this brand before, Port City Brewing Company out of Alexandria, Virginia. We've had a few of their different brews, but this is, I think it's eloquently named for the time of year. This is their Beach Drive Golden Ale. So with this one, this is the lowest percentage beer we have ever had on this show, including Bud Light. This is 4%. Bud Light's 4.2.
Wow. Right?
This is 4%.
That better taste like Kool-Aid if it's 4%. Christ.
So when you smell it, you're not going to like what I'm about to say. When you smell it, it smells
sour,
like...
sour, I'm not going to like it.
It smells like a sour.
Ugh.
But when you taste it, it's very smooth. It's got a.
It better be at 4% because I'm gonna have to drink 20 of them to get drunk.
It's got a pilsner type taste, right? But it has a slight IPA type bite, right? Then that hoppiness that you can taste afterwards. So it's not bad though. I actually enjoy it. It's definitely something that I could see myself pounding a few of these. They're not bad, you know, sitting out in front of a fire on a beach. I'll pound a few. Not a problem. Yeah.
You're going to need to catch a buzz. Hey, big shout out to Justin, one of our big followers, man. I know we talked to him the other day. He said he had gone up to Liquor Stop. Justin lives all the way out in Pasadena.
Which is, Liquor for Stop, those of you who don't know, Pasadena to where Liquor Stop is like a 45-minute drive.
45-minute to an hour drive. Yeah. So big shout out to Justin. I know the crew up there at Liquor Stop definitely took care of you. So glad you went out there, got what you needed. Thanks for showing the support. I know we appreciate that, but even more importantly, the guys over at Liquor Stop appreciate it.
Yeah, they appreciate it, and they're still doing. Obviously, go mention us. Birdland BS sent you. Get your 10%. And James got his on my front lawn yesterday when he stopped by on his normal weekly or his daily walk around the neighborhood. He stopped by and got some. So go check it out, Liquor Stop.
Holy Ravens, it's 8:30. I didn't realize how long we were on them for.
We were on them for a while, buddy. So we gotta get through this. All right, first thing we gotta do, right?
Yep.
You got your drink ready?
I do.
All right, I gotta get one ready here. I'm gonna get a shot ready because I know you have it.
Let me give the plug to DeWalt. Where's the camera? There we go.
There you go. There's your DeWalt plug. You're working.
I'm not getting paid for this, but I'll plug DeWalt just because I work for him.
Are you salary?
Yes.
Technically, you're getting paid.
Always getting paid. Except for the furlough part.
This one goes out to the human vacuum cleaner.
Yeah, cheers.
Who turned 83. Brooksy Robinson, buddy.
Happy birthday to you, old man.
Woo, man. Happy birthday, man. And a guy, talk about a guy that, like, not only the impact that he had on the field, but the impact off the field, even to today.
Yeah.
Right, this guy is such a community guy, right? He's been all about the community. They brought him on last year. He's continued to be a great ambassador for the team and the sport. What more could you ask for?
I know. You know, he's been very influential, too, with a lot of younger players that have come through the system. Yeah. I know him and Adam Jones had a very strong relationship when Adam was here. Adam has nothing but the utmost respect for Brooks Robinson. He put a post out about his birthday today on social media as well, calling him the greatest defensive third baseman of all time, if not just the greatest overall third baseman of all time. Just a class act. He is the model of what an athlete should be. You know, the full on thing, not just like you said, not just what he brought on field, what he brings off the field, what he brings to the community. Just the total package. Good dude.
Yeah. I mean, and speaking about community, right? So the Orioles, with everything going on, the Orioles have still been active, and there's been a few stories that have come out over the past week, maybe week and a half, with some of these that I figure we got to talk about, right? Just because it's Orioles related and it's present situation related, right?
Yeah, let's go.
Did you get a chance to view the video that MLB and the Orioles had online of Elias doing a Zoom conference call with a bunch of, I think it was at MedStar Health, a bunch of their frontline workers? Did you get to see that?
I didn't get to see the video. I saw the article posted about it, but I didn't get a chance to see the video, no.
It was a good video. If you haven't gotten to see it, go check out. It's actually on MLB. If you got the app on the MLB.com, under the Orioles section, it's Elias doing a Zoom call. It is actually really good, right?
And now, was this a Q&A related to, like, coronavirus in baseball? Was this specific to Orioles? Like,
From my understanding, they were allowed to ask anything they wanted.
Oh, wow.
So one of the questions was, like, you know, what's your favorite thing about being a GM? Another one was, like, you know, what if you could have one player past or present, if you could trade for one player past or present, who would it be? He gave a little bit of a political answer, I'll be honest, to that one.
What was his answer? I want to know.
His answer was Cal Ripken.
Ah, okay.
But he said, his words were, I think a guy like Cal could really be a benefit to this young team. And I thought about that afterwards after I watched it. I was like, you know what? That's probably the best answer out of everything that he said. Because it comes down to, he didn't actually say it, but it comes down to Cal's work ethic, right?
Yeah,
that's what he would love to instill in these guys, is the work ethic that he had.
The Iron Man.
So it's just great to see, you know, the Iron Man showed up. If you guys didn't get to see it last week, I had to watch it afterwards because it appeared during our show, 24 Hours to Hell and Back. Did you watch that?
I did not.
Oh, it was the Ellicott City version. Dude, you got to go check it out. It's on Fox. Okay. If you have Fox Now and you have cable, go check it out. Great episode. They have the Terps football team show up to help move stuff.
I heard about it, yeah.
Out of one. So, and then they had Cal show up to another one. Great episode. Loved it. Maryland and Baltimore through and through. Absolutely loved it.
Awesome.
But just everything that they've been given back, right? So he not only does he hold that Zoom call with the frontline workers, they only show you like 2 or 3 minutes of the clip. Supposedly it was like a half hour long where they actually
Didn't he bring like a bunch of meals and everything for him too?
So he actually did to MedStar Harbor Hospital. So a little bit different variation of MedStar Health. It's one of their centers. Him and Brandon Hyde teamed together and bought 645 meals with Chick-fil-A and had them delivered to them. And the cool thing about that was they did it during the day, and then they had another set delivered for the night shift. Nice. Which to me, having been somebody that has worked morning shifts and night shifts
somebody
usually
gets shortchanged.
Exactly. Usually, yeah. So for them to say this amount of meals are to be set aside and given specifically to the night shift, I thought was awesome.
Yeah,
right?
That is pretty cool.
Stepping out of their realm. He also then went down to the World Central Kitchen downtown. And fed, you know, put some boxes and some bags together for families that were in need in the Baltimore area. And so he's feeding families in need there. Awesome. You got, you know, not just talking about Elias, but Evan Phillips and his wife. Evan Phillips is a guy that's rehabbing. Let's not forget this, from a knee injury. He is rehabbing. Him and his wife are sewing masks for frontline workers.
That's awesome.
Like, this is the giving back that... You know, Brooksy, we talked about Brooksy, and that's kind of why this was a nice transition. Brooksy is a huge community guy. And that's what this is instilling in these guys, because even our youngest and most touted draft pick gets in on this.
Yeah, I saw this.
Wasn't a lot, but you know what? It is a lot. Adley Rutschman gives $10,000 to fill food boxes for families in need in the Oregon area. Would I have liked that to have been Baltimore? Yeah, I would have liked it to have been Baltimore. But you know what? He's helping a community that helped him.
Yeah, you know, I got no problems with that. I mean, we see that a lot with athletes that still give back to their home cities, even though that their new playing city might be a different, you know, different area. Torrey Smith, right? Torrey Smith is a guy that moved on from Baltimore, had a career out in San Francisco, had a career out in Philadelphia and Carolina.
Another guy that was on 24 Hours to Hell and Back, by the way.
Torrey Smith.
Torrey Smith, yeah. His family.
Nice.
they went and enjoyed once one of, I think it was the Phoenix, I forget what they named, it used to be the Phoenix Emporium and the brewing company that was there. They combined them, and Torrey Smith was there for the grand reopening, and it was awesome.
That's awesome. Well, let's talk a little bit about, you had mentioned it prior to the show, and this was something I didn't read about. I heard about it, but I don't know, like, the
I'm excited to get this into your head and see what you think.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see, because I know MLB's been talking about a bunch of potential rule changes to try to salvage a season. What might happen? What might not happen? What are some, you know, discouraged things, some required things, all that type of stuff. What did you find in this article?
So I think it came out on Sunday that they had released it on Friday to the teams, and the teams made it a little bit more public on Sunday, right? So the MLB has published a copy of potential rules and told the teams, we need to hear back from you by the 22nd, which is Friday. With your
this
suggestions
is for
and input.
The upcoming season.
This is for the upcoming 2020
this
season.
This season now. Okay.
So I want to run through a few of these and get your, because you legitimately, like, I can't stress this enough to the fans, Fred was not allowed to look at this portion of the show. You were going to get Fred's legit reaction to this. Rules and guidelines include all mascots banned from the field. Any problem there?
No.
Fine with it?
Who are they going to entertain?
Exactly.
There's no fans to entertain.
Exactly. The big thing was, oh, we can't have the Philly Fanatic and Mr. Matt. And I'm like, fuck the Philly Fanatic and Mr. Matt. Like, yep. I don't care about either of them.
Yeah, who cares?
Screw them. Right? Yeah. All right. So here's the deal. I got the banned list in front of me. And when I say banned, I don't mean like YouTube and Nirvana. I mean the list of you can't do these, period. Okay. Per the rules.
All right.
Lineup cards exchange? Not a thing. You don't get to exchange lineup cards in the traditional way. Supposedly, it's going to be virtual.
I think that's smart. There's ways in the digital era that we live in now that can get around that. I'm good with that.
Okay. High fives and fist bumps? Not allowed. You
what
hit
happens?
A home run?
Do you? I mean, what
keep
happens?
Your hands
you
to yourself.
Do you get fined? Do you get ejected from the game if I give you a high five?
There's no explanation on that. I'm just giving you what they've got me.
Wow. Okay.
Bat boys and bat boys and bat girls and bat ball boys and ball girls, they're banned.
Ridiculous. They should have never been part of the game anyway. These guys get paid enough that they can distribute their own bats.
What about the balls? The foul balls? Go down the line. You got to throw it back in?
The roughs.
Oh wait,
the
wait,
umpires.
Wait! Hold on. I'll get to what happens when you have multiple players touch a ball. Just wait. Spitting, water jugs. They're both banned.
Yeah. Good luck getting athletes to stop spitting. That's just going to happen, and they're not even going to realize they're doing it. Good luck with that.
The use of saunas, steam rooms, pools, and cryotherapy chambers.
Okay. I think that makes sense with everything that's going on.
So you can't recover.
Most of these
all.
Athletes have those things in their homes anyway because they can afford it.
All right. Whatever. All right. Fair enough. All right. Players may not touch their face to give signs, and they're not allowed to lick their fingers before pitching the ball.
Okay. I mean.
Good luck.
Yeah. Good luck.
Here's the biggest one to me on the ban list. Restaurants are off limits on the road, including ones in hotels, as are hotel fitness centers.
Meaning the players and staffs can't go to restaurants when they're on the road?
There are three tiers. There's players and coaches. There's the like, I'll call them the trainers and the additional staff. And then there's the people that are, you know, normally accompany the team and do their reservations and make sure the reservations are all set up. None of those people are allowed to use any of those things.
If we learned anything from The Last Dance and the whole pizza incident, this should have been implemented a long time ago, apparently.
Fairly enough. All right, so that's the ban list, right? Here's the discouraged list. You're discouraged from showering at the ballpark. And you're encouraged to arrive in uniform.
Yes! Go back to the Little League days. I like it.
High school Little League. Show up in uniform.
Man, awesome.
Oh, man.
Reminds me of the days of running into Blockbuster Video in my Little League uniform to get a movie to watch at the end of the game.
After the game, you go and they get that. Grab the popcorn that's at the checkout. Yeah.
Oh, it's great. I like it.
Hitting in indoor cages, discouraged.
Don't get that one.
Nope. Don't get it. Don't get it at all.
That makes absolutely no sense.
So that's the banned and discouraged. Let's talk about the required and the full encouraged list, right? Required list. Batting practice pitchers are required to wear masks.
Why? They're 30-something or 40-something feet away.
60 feet away.
Well, they're in front of the mound, right? So they're not 60.
All right.
Batting practice, right? So they're 50. Like 50.
They're 10 feet.
Right.
Let's be real.
Well over six. That doesn't make sense.
Dugout telephones are to be disinfected after each use. This one had me
laughing.
Why
are we still using dugout telephones? When's the last time you saw a payphone hanging up on a building somewhere?
What a fucking walkie-talkie in the guy's ear, for God's sake.
Right.
Like,
what
seriously?
Are we doing? Catch up with the times, MLB.
Oh, man. Seats behind the dugouts? Yeah, they're going to be used for social distancing your team.
So
literally, when I say this, no joke, there is, and I put it on our thing, and I know you didn't look at it. There are literally diagrams that you have to be four seats apart and two rows.
So they won't be using dugouts at all anymore, you're saying? They're gonna
no, they're using dugouts. But basically, the dugouts are used for players that are going to be playing in the game.
Oh, wow.
Exactly, right? So if you want to get a pinch hitter, it's, hey, I need you to pinch hit for me. Let's go.
Wow.
And the other team can't hear that you're having a pinch hit.
I can't argue with that, because if they had everybody that's in the dugout normally, there's no way to properly social distance. It's going to be weird, but
I get it, but put a guy in the clubhouse. Why the hell does he need to be in the dugout? Or, like, above the dugout? He's watching the game. Let him watch it on TV in comfort. If he's got to go pee, he doesn't have to go up to the freaking stands. Oh, my goodness.
I get that one. That one's okay with me.
All right. Next day's starting pitcher is not allowed in the dugout. He's not permitted in the dugout.
The next day's starting pitcher is not allowed in the dugout.
Yep. If you got a player that's sick, he can't be around him. But he can be around the players that aren't playing and could still be sick.
But they're 6 feet apart because they're four seats apart.
Yes. Right? Because that's
how it
works.
All right with that. I'm okay with that one, too.
Managers and coaches must wear masks in the dugout.
I get that. Because coaches are going to come up to you in the middle of the game, talk to you about stuff and all that. You're never going to be able to stay 6 feet apart.
Yeah.
So I get that.
Next one I get. The entire traveling party, including players, must wear personal protective equipment while on buses and flights.
Agreed.
Okay. There needs to be a minimum of six back and forths from the hotel to the stadium with the bus.
Huh?
You have to transport your entire team and staff in a minimum of six trips.
Oh, so to keep people spread out on the
bus? On the bus.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't see them doing that with one bus. I see the teams buying five additional buses and having them all go at the same time.
I would do that. I would pay for that.
It's what the teams will do.
All right.
You imagine it'd be like the one that's on the sixth bus, right? Like, you're just that like 25th guy on the roster. You got to wait until 3 o'clock in the morning before the bus actually comes back for the sixth time to pick you up and take you. That'd be awful.
Yeah, right. A ball will be thrown away after it's touched by multiple players, and throwing the ball around the infield will be discouraged. Personnel who rub baseballs with mud for the umpires will use gloves.
Okay, rubbing the baseballs with gloves on makes sense. And you said a ball is going to be thrown away after it's touched by multiple players?
Yep.
Okay, multiple's kind of broad. So is that two, three? What is it? It's probably going to be discretionary.
I don't know. But throwing the ball around the field, the infield, which would be four players, it's discouraged.
They're going to go through a hell of a lot of baseballs.
But if your catcher's sick, throwing it right back to the pitcher's fine. Just saying. All right, so here's the encourage list. Fielders are encouraged to retreat several steps away from the base runner between pitches. Like, you know what came to mind with this? Do you remember before 11-12 when you could lead?
Yeah.
There's no stealing until the pitch is thrown.
Like, you got to keep your foot on the bag until the pitcher releases the ball.
Like, James stopped by and grabbed the Brewer of the Week, and him and I were talking, and he'd already seen it. And him and I said the same thing. Like, how the hell are you going are pickoffs null and void at this point?
Yeah, there will be stolen bases left and right if that's the case.
Oh, but wait, it gets better with that same scenario. First and third base coaches are not to approach base runners or umpires.
So what the hell are base coaches even going to do at this point? They can't touch their face.
You've
they can't give signs.
3 seconds between you and the pitcher. Steal, steal, steal.
What happens? What happens if this is your steal sign?
Yeah, you can't touch your face.
Exactly, you can't touch.
You're going to have to grab your balls. Something. There's going to be a whole lot of ball touching.
And here's the best part about it, right? Because this is you always see this when there's a player on first and the guy on first, the first baseman. Players should not socialize with other players. Like, how do you this is why I put in the beginning, are we being punked by the MLB at this point?
See, these are just, they have to say them. That's why it's on an encouraged list. Is because this is something that they have to say, but there's no way for them to actually mitigate it. There's no way for them to regulate it. Like, there's no way for them to manage that. But they have to say it just to make it seem like they're making an opportunity or making a, you know.
But you're not allowing, like, the indoor. Right. We talked about not indoor cages. Discouraged. Not really allowed. What about guys who are, you know, working on weight equipment?
Yeah.
What's the difference what I say. Here?
The discouraged and encouraged stuff is just MLB's attempt to say, hey, we encourage them and we discourage them to do these things. It's the banned list and the required list that you'll actually have to see enforced. Everything else that's just encouraged and discouraged might as well not be said. It's just a waste.
All right, still a quick social media shout out here. I know Brian messages Tony, James, Steve, Ryan, Guran, Kamal, Troy, Joe. I know I also saw Nick on there. I see, let's see here. I know we said Troy.
TJ.
Yeah, TJ. There was somebody else. Josh. I saw Josh on there as well. So appreciate all of you guys tuning in. A few things that he said. So Kamal, did y'all see the Ravens post about how Judon could have his best season this year?
Yeah, and I do think that Judon could very easily have his best year because, like I said earlier, they're bringing pass rush from the interior now, right? So they're not going to be able to put two bodies over on Judon, right? Judon, no. I like Judon's chances on a one-on-one matchup with pretty much any tackle in the league. So I do think Judon is poised, especially with these free agents additions of Calais Campbell and Derek Wolf. I think he's poised to have a big year for sure.
Agreed. He brings up TJ Robert Andino says, what team do y'all think the Ravens will lose to this year?
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to put, we'll go through this as we get closer to the year, as far as who we think that they'll lose to. Obviously, the biggest challenges are going to be the Chiefs, but I like our chances better this year being at home. The Titans are obviously fresh in our mind because of what they did to us in the playoffs. Right. You always have that one or two AFC North loss that you can usually account for. Will the Browns be that much better this year than they were last year? They should be. They better be, or there's even more trouble in Little China. How much better will the Steelers be with Ben Roethlisberger coming back? So there's teams out there. I'm not going to put my finger on who we'll lose to yet. Stay tuned for a couple of episodes from now when we get closer to the season, and we'll go through the schedule one by one and make our picks.
Nick says, are they going to make them drink bleach? We're referring to the baseball
player. Might as well at this point.
Might as well.
All right, Scott, so it's time for some shell and tell, some turtle talk, man. We got a lot of news, some really big news.
Is this why you're wearing the Terps hat?
I am, man. I'm proud. All right. Boy. I'm pumped. I'm really hoping there's going to be a season for college football this year. The Terps get their quarterback, man. The guy that we talked about last week who was rumored after he put his name into the transfer portal, the potential landing spot, either being here at the University of Maryland or potentially down at the University of Miami, closer to his family and closer to where his brother's playing. Talia Tagovailoa commits to the University of Maryland. All right. A huge, huge get.
I had a straight question off the bat, right? Is there true talent here, or are we just looking at a name?
No, there's – when you look at the kind of talent that's come through – the University of Maryland at the quarterback position specifically, they haven't had this kind of talent come through in probably over 20 years. I mean, okay. That's how, now listen, is he just another guy on Alabama? Yeah. That's why he was able to go in the transfer portal. Is he just another guy on one of these top five power schools? Yeah, absolutely. He's just another quarterback that comes through because they get 4- and 5-star quarterbacks like they're running out of style every year. They've got 5-star quarterbacks sitting on the bench. We legit have 2 4-star quarterbacks. Like I said, we haven't had that kind of talent at the quarterback position in 20 years. You got Lance Lejeune, who was the big star on the TV show, right? Who I think will ultimately be the starter this year if we do have a season. If Talia doesn't get the transfer or the waiver approved to be able to play this year. Cause right now he would have to sit through the 2020 season, wouldn't be eligible until next year. So there's a lot to like about this kid. He's got great, great pocket awareness. A lot of the same attributes that his brother has. They go about it a little bit differently. Obviously he's a right-handed quarterback where his brother was a left-handed quarterback. He's got great vision. I think his running ability is a little underrated. They didn't ask him to run a whole lot in high school. And I think a lot of that had to do with his offensive line was just trash. He had to scramble a lot just to extend plays, which I think bodes well for him at the collegiate level. He keeps his eyes down the field. He's an extremely accurate passer. You know, he doesn't have that Joe Flacco type of deep ball, that crazy arm strength, but he definitely has a hose and he's definitely very accurate with the football. This is a big, big get for the Terps.
Yeah, I think it definitely comes. That's why I asked, right? Because obviously his brother and his brother's pedigree plays a lot into what some people think of him, right? And that's why I was curious to get your take, because I think there's some people that kind of say, well, he's just a name. But this guy truly does have a talent and has the ability to have an impact on this team right away, right? So what I would ask you then is, all right, I think we both agree that there's some impact, but what kind of impact could we see him have on this team?
Well, there's the cumulative effect, right? Because he is a Tagovailoa, right? Because of his name, right? And because of what his brother did and because he's coming from, you know, transferring out from the University of Alabama, he's going to bring some names with him. There's already offensive linemen out there that have been, you know, rumored to Maryland that are now excited and talking about the potential to play with Talia. That bodes well for the University of Maryland. They've already got a great 2021 class coming in as of right now. If everything stands and we don't see a mass exodus as far as commits go, this 2021 class that's coming in is legit. Now, granted, so far, the majority of that 2021 class, the majority of the big names, the four-star names, are on the defensive line specifically. I think it's like four-star defensive linemen that are coming in on that 2021 class. But we talk about that all the time, right? It starts in the trenches, both on the offensive side and the defensive side. And there's some names that the Terps went after last year that they brought in for offensive line depth. I think we'll see those guys develop another year under their belt, another year to train. Like I said, I think this has a cumulative effect on this team from an outside perspective and just from a pure talent standpoint. The guy is the ultimate competitor. There's just a lot to like about him.
Does this the end of the Caleb Williams talks?
Yeah. Yeah, that's out the window. As much as I love Caleb and I'd love to see him here, I think that's pretty much a done deal. He's going to go to Oklahoma at this point. It was down to pretty much a two-team race. Now, Oklahoma's in a similar situation. They've got a couple of guys on the depth chart that are ahead of him, but also got a couple of guys on the depth chart that could quickly make an impact on their team and quickly go on to the NFL, which creates an opportunity for Caleb.
All right, so then what are you going to say to a guy who's well-respected in the industry, like Paul Feinbaum, right, who said, oh, this is all ado about nothing, right, and that he thinks he's a great high school player, won't be much. If he leads a 7-5 record, good for them. Like, what are you going to say to a guy like that?
Hello? Did you not watch last year? We just won 3 games.
Yeah.
If that turns us from a 3-win team to a 7-5 team, yeah, damn sure we'll take it. That
makes you bowl eligible.
Exactly. That's right. So, okay, for all you spoiled Alabama fans out there and for all you spoiled fans that, you know, are used to going bowling every year and that are 10-win team or plus every single
Clemson,
year.
Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma.
Yeah. Like, this might not have the same impact for you and your university, but for Maryland, who's trying to turn the tide, right, and who's already doing so, Mike Locksley has put his roots in the ground, and he's doing a great job in getting some of these local recruits to stay. You get a guy, a big name like this from the outside, who's not a local commit, to come here. That means bigger picture from the outside looking in. Even the outside guys are seeing it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's huge. That's huge. So Finnenbach can say whatever the hell he wants. This is a big, big get for Maryland.
So, right, with them getting him, we get Piggy making an announcement this week.
Yeah, so Piggy, we talked about him going to the transfer portal, but there hadn't been any confirmation as to where he was going to go or where he was going to end up. He actually ended up making his commitment announcement. I think it was yesterday. If it wasn't yesterday, it was the day before. He's going to go to Western Kentucky, which I think is a good fit for him. He's not going to get many opportunities, you know, in the Big Ten or any other major conference out there. Western Kentucky is a team that he could come in and make an immediate impact. They're going to value him there. I have nothing but the utmost respect for Piggy and what he did here. I think a lot of his troubles came down to terrible offensive line play. And then obviously all the turmoil that he went through for his couple of years here with all the transitions, you know, that went from one head coach to the next head coach. I think Piggy, I think he'll have a good senior year, and I think that's a good spot for him to land.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to ask you kind of a leading question. I feel like this could be like an open question. I'm going to let you rant here for a second because I step away for 30 seconds here.
Yeah.
What's your gut feeling on if there's actually – because this has been a lot of debate back and forth. Is there really going to be a 2020 football season in college football?
It's a loaded question. I mean, I've kind of teetered on the fence with this, whether there's going to be a season or not. You know, me being a pessimist sometimes, I immediately didn't think there was going to be a season this year. But I've kind of changed my tune because there are some rumors of plans that potentially you might see some of these conferences separating themselves from the NCAA altogether and doing their own seasons. So it may not be a traditional season. I don't think anything professional, collegiate, doesn't matter. I don't think anything's going to be traditional about 2020 for sure. I do not think, and I hate this, but I do not think it'll be in front of fans in any shape or form or fashion. So we might be doing tailgates at the house on a outdoor TV or something like that to tailgate and party and watch these games. Home field advantage would go out the window without the fans being there. Not that Maryland is much of a home field advantage as it is right now, unfortunately, but I do think that there will be a season this year. There's too much money to be had, right? By not having a season at all, you get nothing from 2020. You get absolutely zero. So I get it that in college football, the TV deals don't make up as big a portion as they do in some of the professional sports, but even a 30% cut, right? If you're, let's just say 70% of your revenues are generated from ticket sales and stadium concessions and all that kind of stuff, apparel, whatever. 70% of your cut is all of that. 30% of your cut is through TV deals. 30% is a lot better than 0%. So I think, again, we talk about how some of these other sports are starting to leak out and starting to play a little bit and starting to kind of test the waters. I think college football won't be as we knew it last year, but I do think that there will be a season of sorts. And I think a lot of these power conferences, the SEC, the Big Ten, the ACC, they'll figure out a way to play, even right. if it's independently and separating themselves from the NCAA.
Well, and worst case scenario, right? I was kind of thinking about this whole situation, right? Worst case scenario, if you said, all right, instead of a 12 game season, we're going to cut this to an 8 or a 9 game season. It's still college football. There's still money to be made at that point that you can do and you can kind of get away with. It's all going to dictate what colleges are able to do, right? If colleges are able to have classes and things like that. And the other thing that plays a factor here is the attendance. How many students are you going to allow to attend? Some of these big schools have 70, 80,000 seat stadiums.
And that's what I'm saying. That's why I think like that's a big loss, losing fans like that. But I'm just saying, if they were to lose fans, you're still going to generate more money through TV deals, right? And I still think that it's too big a bag for the NCAA to completely turn in the card and say, no, there's not going to be an entire 2020 season. But I don't know. You know, that's that's definitely not a decision that I make or have any influence at all. I, for the sake of myself and my co-host for Shell and Tell, Ryan, and all his family, who are all big Terp fans, I'm hoping, really hoping, there's some sort of season.
I really, truly agree with you. I hope there's some sort of season because I would love to see some college football here.
I do want to touch on a couple of other stories. Obviously, Piggy being the big story. A couple other guys that we haven't really talked about that committed recently to Maryland. Not going to go into depth with these guys, but just to kind of put some names out there, some guys that you should kind of keep an eye on that have recently made a commitment. We talked last week about the big one, another defensive tackle, Marcus Bradley. He was a huge get. Like I said, it gives them their fourth defensive lineman on the 2021 class.
Fourth four-star. Yeah.
Really, really great to see on the defensive side. They get a couple of tight ends recently. They get CJ Dupree. They call him Baby Gronk. He's a big blocking tight end, 6'5", like 245 pounds. He's a big boy. There's a lot of questions of where he might actually line up. You know, he's played a little all over. He played a little bit of quarterback in school. He could potentially be an H-back. You could see him put on a little bit more weight and even shift over to the offensive line. He's one of those guys, if you ever played Madden or if you ever played, you know, NCAA football, they label as an athlete, an ATH, right? That's what this guy is. He's a physical specimen. He's a great athlete. He'll find a role. It's just a matter of where.
If you're putting a guy like him on the line, you think he's a better fit at guard or tackle here?
Yeah, I mean, from his size, I think he would move to the interior. Usually you see like the 6'6", 6'7", guys on the outside at tackle. and the guys that are like 310 plus on the outside. I think this guy at 245, if you asked him to beef up and put on maybe 40 pounds and get up to 285, he could do that pretty easily and shift over to one of the interior guard positions pretty well. Again, guy's a super athlete. Will play anywhere you ask him to play.
I guess my only thought would be is if you do ask him to put on the weight, right, you know he's got okay hands as a tight end.
Right.
Putting him at guard, he could go out as tackle. He could go out and report as an eligible receiver at some points and be able to have an effect on the team at that.
And that's kind of where I'm going with this, right, is he's got the versatility to be able to do a lot of things because of his size and because of his athleticism. I think he could be a guy that they plug in a couple of different roles. Maybe they don't limit him to just one role. They got to use him a little all over.
Yeah.
But another tight end that they picked up, kid that I think will make a pretty big impact as a receiving tight end, Weston Wolf. Got decent speed, great hands, needs to put on a little bit of weight right now. I think he's at like 6'4", 210. So right now he's a big body wide receiver. Right. I could see the Terps even using this guy in a way that Oklahoma used Mark Andrews, you know, split okay. out. Even the Ravens use him in a similar role. Mark Andrews was a glorified wide receiver, really, is what he was. He wasn't labeled a tight end, but he played more wide receiver than he did tight end at college. So I could see if the Terps don't really get him to gain too much weight, he could have that kind of role. Okay. So they get two really good tight ends. The running back backfield, we obviously lost some big names, losing Anthony McFarland, losing Javon Leak, Lolo's gone. So there's a lot of question marks at running back, but they did get a couple of rookies that came in. They're going to come in this year for 2020, Penny Boone, and I can't think of the other guy's name right now, but they got a couple of good running backs there. They got two guys out of St. John's High. So they got both running backs. St. John's was basically uncharted territory for the Terps, and the Terps have pulled like four or five guys from St. John's High School now, which is huge because that's a big yeah. breeding ground locally for the Terps. So yeah. they get both running backs. We talked about Baby Bus a couple of weeks ago to Littleton's. He's that guy yeah. that just like a butterball running away from people. He kind of built like Jerome Bettis, Baby Bus. Big guy. I don't know how it translates. What's that?
I said with immaculate speed.
Yeah, right. I don't know how it translates to the collegiate game. We'll see, but he's done really well for himself in the high school level. They get his teammate, Colby McDonald. He's the number 70 running back in the country. He's got decent quickness. He's a good ball catcher out of the backfield. So another piece to add to the running back stable. I like Colby.
A guy that can really develop, especially in this running back game that we've had over the past few years. We've seen some guys develop like a McFarland. You know,
right.
He can have that path, and potentially with his history, he could have a path that could exceed that of a guy like McFarland.
He's not the athlete that McFarland was.
You don't think so? No, okay.
No. I think that he'll be a good piece. Trying to think of somebody I could even compare him to, and I can't really think of anybody off the top of my head
right now. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, hard comparison, but I think we'll have an impact. I just don't think he'll be a game breaker type running back. The only thing I'm kind of nervous about, and I think this is probably most schools out there, is just with all the question marks and the uncertainty of everything. Whenever they start allowing recruits to actually start going out and taking visits to some of these other schools and some of these bigger schools, that's what's happening right now. Is the challenge is these recruits can't go out and meet and physically see all these schools and right. what they bring. Like, and this is me just, again, being a little bit of a pessimist. I worry about some of these recruits that have committed going out there, getting lost in the limelight of some of these bigger colleges, and there being this mass exodus, this mass, you know, recruits that just yeah. decommit because they get lost in the hopes of going to a bigger college.
Do you think to save some competitive balance in that sense, that when that does happen, that the NCAA says, you know, it needs to happen when all states are ready? Like kind of like what the NFL is doing, is like, if they're not allowed to go back, you're not allowed to do that. Because it creates an unfair advantage, especially – let's be real. Some of these central states, in Oklahoma and Alabama, they've had less going on with the COVID. They've had looser restrictions, and they're already kind of I'm not going to say back to normal, but they're back more back to normal than a place like Maryland or New York. You know, do you think the NCAA takes a rule out of, you know, or a page out of NFL's playbook in that sense?
I don't know. See, I don't know if the NCAA has the same kind of authority over the individual conferences, you know, like the NFL does. The NFL is a business. Not that the NCAA isn't a business.
Let's be real.
Yeah. But the NFL is a little bit different. They have jurisdiction over all 32 teams. The NCAA doesn't have that same type of jurisdiction the individual conferences do.
But hold on a second. I don't know. They have the ability to impose fines and things like that. They have some form of that.
I'm not saying that. I just don't know. I can't say like definitively like they would with the NFL. Definitively, I can say with the NFL, they're going to compete. They're going to keep the competitive balance balanced, right?
Yeah.
I can't say that about the NCAA because I just don't know how that works. I'm not 100%.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
All right, Scott, it's time for the rundown, man. It's that topic where we kind of shuffle around all the different sports worlds, and let's face it, really for the last 5 weeks, the majority
been one
of this,
thing we've been talking about.
Yeah, the majority of this has been dominated by the Last Dance series. Well, this was the last dance of the Last Dance, right? This
what
was
a way to end week. It, man! What a way to end it!
Really was. It was a great, great finish to an awesome.
I would
documentary.
Have never have guessed they went. They won their sixth title. Oh wait, I lived
yeah, right.
it.
Who would have known that it was going to end this way? But I think. This documentary was so well done that I think you're going to start seeing all types of documentaries done like this. You know what I mean? I think you're going to see cameramen in locker rooms like you've never seen before, documenting every fucking thing that they possibly can. Because this, again, Michael Jordan, in my opinion, and we can fight this. And we can argue this. We'll go in circles.
We're not going to argue. You may argue with some of our viewers.
That's what
we're
I'm
not going to argue.
It's just he's the greatest basketball player of all time, right? So for them to kind of be forward thinking like this, and to allow a camera to come in and document his last year, this last run from start to finish, man, it's so awesome. And then to hold it off this long, Jordan's been sitting on these files for, you know. They've been doing
I forget what I remember seeing. There has been so many cuts and iterations of this show because Jordan has refused to approve it.
Right.
This is the one that Jordan approved.
Right.
Right. So this has been happening for years. It's kind of to your point, right? You talked about this isn't an argument. And here's why, like, this isn't an argument to me of whether he's over LeBron. Period. You can get mad at me for this. I don't give a shit. The flu game.
Huh.
We all learned.
We thought the flu game.
I was going to say, we all learned in episode 9 that it wasn't the flu game.
Right.
Michael Jordan was given direct food poisoning. Why else would you have 5 guys show up to deliver a pizza? And I'm sorry, I'm a little annoyed at his trainer.
Yeah.
If you thought 5 guys showed up, I'd probably be like, okay. And Michael, 5 guys just delivered this pizza. I'm not so sure about this. Something's off. We're away. We're in an away city. 5 guys show up to deliver your pizza.
Yeah, I don't know. The whole story was a little weird to me. The fact that, like you said, 5 guys show up to deliver it. The fact that they knew it was going to Michael Jordan,
that
he ate it all to himself, didn't let anybody else eat the pizza. Like, there are a lot of things about this that made me question stuff. Was he really food poisoned, or was he just drunk off his ass? Like, did he get wasted, you know, that night before, and maybe that's
had
why
a hangover
he was sick.
Or something? Yeah,
who knows what it was, but. I mean, then why do you change the story? You know, everybody believed it was the flu. He could have just ran with it was the flu. So why would you change the story to
you had the flu and you won the championship the next game? Like,
right.
Why?
It's just, I don't know. The whole story is bizarre. But regardless, whatever it was, I don't care if he was hungover. I don't care if he had the flu. I don't care if he had, you know, food poisoning, whatever it was, he was sick as a dog and still went out there and dominated the competition, still went out there and had one of his best career nights in the playoffs.
Brian says he was hungover, which was still impressive.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Yeah. Regardless of what it was, still went out there. I think one of the other stories in this game, or in this docuseries, the last two episodes that I thought was kind of interesting was Pippen, right? Pippen has been taking a lot of heat because, you know, there's been some games that he's sat out for personal reasons and all this stuff. And then you had the other people that are like, well, he was the most underpaid player in NBA history, which I get. Like, there's all these things that have been passed around about Pippen. Well, then you see him come out of the game in the NBA finals, the last game, we all knew he was having
back problems that game. It was announced before the game. I remember hearing that when I was watching it back in the day. Like, we all knew it. But this docuseries opened up how bad it actually was.
And I like the pain on his face and how he was moving and how he was walking. I can 100% relate to being a taller guy and maybe not being in the best shape of my life. Over the years, I've had back issues as well. And I've had some back issues shoveling snow, right? And either I'm just not using the right form, or I've been shoveling too much, too quickly, too long, too heavy, whatever it might be, right? I will pull these muscles in my back. And I mean, it's debilitating to a point where, like, I could see in his motions, right? In the way he was walking and the way he was stepping. If you take a step the wrong way when you've injured your back in that way, it will send an electric shock through your spine into your head that is like a pain that you cannot explain without feeling it.
I've been there, right? I've been diagnosed with a herniated disc in my back. It is a lateral herniation. I still have it. It's a lateral herniation of my L5-S1. Mm-hmm. When the day that I found it out, literally no joke, my wife and I were at Sears and we were looking at stuff. She went to the bathroom. I was like, oh, I'm going to sit on one of these beds and just wait for her. I went to go stand up and I just felt this pop in my back. Within two and a half hours, I was in an ambulance because my dad couldn't even carry me down the stairs because I was in so much pain. They had to literally stair lift me out of my bedroom in my house that I crawled up to get out. I feel his pain. So for him to play a basketball game like that, you got all the praise in the world from me, bro.
I had a similar incident where it was icy. It was icy out. This is when I lived in an apartment and I was walking out to my truck and I was walking off the curb. And as I was coming off the curb, my foot slipped. And I slipped off the curb. I didn't fall, but just the impact of my foot sliding off the curb and hitting the concrete did something to one of my discs or one of my nerves in my back. And I'm telling you, I fell to my knees and had to crawl back into my apartment. Could not stand up, could not get up. So I 100% relate to him. And you saw it in the docuseries where he would basically go back there, get 5 minutes of medication and a rub down and just to loosen up.
Yeah.
He'd go back out on the court for 5 or 10 minutes and then go right back in for another 5 minutes.
You ever had that electrotherapy, by the way?
I have. Oh, it's weird. It's
so amazing.
It's great. It's great.
I have my own personal one upstairs every once in a while. I'll put it on. I'm like, it hurts, but it feels so good.
Right. So all my all these thoughts that I had about Scotty, when it first happened, because I forgot that he had back issues.
Yeah.
But when I saw him come out of the game, I'm thinking, here we go again with this shit with Scotty. It's literally the NBA Finals. It's the last game of the NBA Finals. You can win your sixth championship if you just stay out there and play. And then they start going into how bad it was and all
and
that.
And Michael knew it was bad, right?
Oh,
Michael, and Michael said to him, dude, I know it sucks. I can tell you're hurting. You being out here and being a decoy is better than you not being on the court at all. And you know what?
Exactly.
It worked, right? What did Pippen say when it came to that last shot?
Right.
I
got the hell out the way. They asked Rodman the same thing. Rodman was like, shit, I know it's Michael's turn. It's Michael's time to shine. This is his moment. I'm just going to do my part and perch my ass right underneath the rim.
So the only question I want to kind of bring up with this, there was so much that went on with this, right? The story with Gus, who was a security guard that wound up being a father figure after his father passed, Steve Kerr's father getting killed. You had the heated games versus Reggie Miller there in the last year.
Yeah.
But the thing that struck me, and I had to get your opinion on, right? Jerry Reinsdorf came out and openly said, I asked Phil to come back regardless of what Kraus said. I asked Phil to come back for a seventh year. And they interviewed Phil, and Phil said, yeah, he did ask me. And I said that the Kraus thing had just gone too far.
Yeah, bridges were burned at that point. Phil was checked out. The entire team was checked out. Like, they all took on this mantra of it's the last dance, right?
Yeah.
That they knew.
They lived it.
They knew it from the beginning of the season. Michael Jordan even said, like, this shit's a joke. Like, you told us in the very beginning of the year that regardless if Phil won 82 games, he was not going to be a head coach.
Right.
He was not going to be the head coach for the late or for the Bulls anymore. So I get, you know, that they wanted to come in and kind of trump that later after the fact, but they should have done that at the beginning of the year. He should have stepped in and stepped over Kraus at that point
and said, what the hell are you doing? You do not do this.
No.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you realize like what you're saying right now?
Yeah.
And like Michael Jordan said, you think these guys, Michael, Rodman, Pippen, all these guys wouldn't have come back for one more run to go after seven? Like nobody, I mean, I get like why some people like to ride off into the sunlight and all of that.
Sunset,
Ray Lewis obviously rode off into the sunset or whatever, rode off into the sunset as a Super Bowl winner. But to reach the kind of dynasty level that the Bulls reached, right?
It's a pinnacle,
six championships,
man. It's a pinnacle.
Six championships in 8 years. These guys absolutely would have wanted to go after one more. Prove to us that we're old. Prove to us that you can beat us.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe the Indiana Pacers come back next year and knock them out of the Eastern Conference. Who knows? Maybe they go to the championship, and that's the year that Karl Malone gets it done, right? Who knows?
Yeah.
But, you know, the Bulls made the decision that they did at the beginning of the year, and that's all she wrote.
All right, so here's my question to you. And this is obviously all straight opinion and speculation at this point.
Yeah.
If you could have gotten all of those pieces to somehow come back, do they win a seventh?
Yeah, 100%. I'll bet everything I own on Michael Jordan, Dennis Rodman, and Scottie Pippen. That they are the greatest trio. They're the greatest trio in all time of all time.
Okay.
They played so well and so fundamentally sound, and the work ethic that Michael Jordan had and the expectation that he demanded from his teammates, I'm not betting against it.
Did
no
you
way.
Hear, by the way, and I had to, like, I literally turned it off, and I don't usually turn FS1 off when it comes to Skip and Shannon, because I like both of them. I think they, like, it's just the dynamic. It plays well.
Yeah.
Skip started going off about how Pippen is not a top 50 player of all time.
He's crazy.
And I had to literally turn it off because I was like, I'm going to punch my phone or my TV if I continue to watch Skip Bayless talk about how Pippen is not one of the top 50 players. When it comes to the game, yes. Did that upset me? That going back and looking at it, that he sat back and said, no, he's not good. Man was a force to be reckoned with. And also say that Dennis Rodman is not one of the top 50 players of all time. I get that a lot of people have their measuring stick as points. But Dennis Rodman is one of the greatest defensive players of all time.
Period. One of the greatest defensive players and one of the greatest rebounders of all time.
Right.
Yeah. You know, so I agree. I don't know if he's top 50, but there's a conversation for it 100%. Scottie Pippen, I 100% think he's a top 50 player of all time, but I will say that I don't know if Scottie Pippen ends up being the player that he is if he's not drafted by the Bulls. I do think that Scottie Pippen developed the way he developed and became the player that he came as he's the best Robin of all time.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Fair enough. Yeah, yeah. I agree with you.
I think that if he gets drafted to a team and he has to be Batman, He doesn't end up being a top 50 player of all time.
He can't be a Batman. He can't. I'll agree with that.
I mean, we saw when he went to Portland, and I think he went a couple other places, but Portland was his main. He just wasn't anywhere near what he was with the Bulls.
But to that same point, are the Bulls what they were without Scottie Pippen?
No.
My answer is simply no.
100% agree with you. That team is what they are because of the team. The team
Michael played a huge factor.
Six championships because they have Michael Jordan.
Right. He's a huge
you take
factor
Michael
in
Jordan,
it.
You take Michael Jordan out of the factor, and there's the two-year gap that they lost their two championships, right?
Right.
That they didn't get their two championships. I think, personally, if Michael Jordan doesn't retire and go to baseball, they potentially win eight. They could have won those 2 years that he's there.
Yeah, they win. Right? They win at least seven, period. At least seven. Yeah. So, yeah, it's. I think it goes into that piece.
Yeah, and Ryan brings up a good point. A la Kyrie Irving, right.
Yeah.
Kyrie Irving is a great number two. He played great when he was in Cleveland with LeBron James. You put him in, you know, Boston.
You try to make a number one, it doesn't happen.
No, he's not a Batman.
No. Well, but it's that whole mentality of alpha, right? We talked about it.
Right.
That is one thing that LeBron, Kobe, and MJ all have in common. They are all alphas on whatever team they're on.
But there's only one alpha.
Exactly. And ironically, I love this. Did you see the video of the interview that LeBron did regarding MJ in this whole documentary? And he even went into how him and the Cowboys were a possibility as far as football things went, right? But he said MJ influenced his game, and not that he bows to MJ, but in not so many words, kind of what he said.
What did I say for the past, 5 weeks of this docuseries? LeBron James was such a talented athlete that I think, personally, if Michael Jordan doesn't have the impact on the NBA and Michael Jordan isn't Michael Jordan, LeBron James could very easily be in the NFL right now.
Agreed.
But I mean, Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan, and I think LeBron emulated Kobe and emulated Michael Jordan and who they were, and he wanted to be that type of impactful athlete in the NBA, and that's ultimately what pushed him to be an NBA player and not pursue the NFL.
Yeah.
That's why I think, like we said, LeBron, Kobe, some of the greats, Bill Russell, some of these greats are all right here. MJ is here.
Yeah, he's just just a step above. It just takes you just that much further. All right, so let's finish through the rundown here. Obviously, we kind of mentioned it. NASCAR runs their first race back at Darlington. Man. Super weird with no fans in the stands.
Yeah. I did. I actually watched the race. I didn't watch all of it. I think I watched the last half of the race. From a racing standpoint, everything was the same.
Yeah.
But once he won, and he's doing his donuts in front of nobody except for the pit crew. And then he gets out of the car and he's like, it's just quiet.
It's just me.
It's eerie.
It's just me.
You can almost hear his echo in the background, bouncing and his voice reflecting off the seats and whatnot, because there's nobody there. It's eerie, but get used to it. I think that's what we're going to see in professional sports, at least for the next year, potentially even 2 years.
It's the new norm with, Kevin Harvick. The big thing about this race, too, right, for these guys, we had a big wreck, a wreck that took out one guy in the first lap, right? And then Jimmy Johnson lap 18, maybe even less than that. He goes out. He gets wrecked. Part of it was these guys not having qualifying. There was no practice. It was literally they tune their cars on a dynamo machine, and then
I know,
yeah, and then go right off onto the track. That's it.
Yeah, green screen the fans in. Wouldn't be a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea.
Cover all the seats in green. Green screen them in. You could do that.
You could go back.
We all know about the wonders of green screen here at Birdland BS.
Just saying.
I want, speaking of NASCAR really quickly, did you watch any of the iRacing series that they did?
Yes, I did.
I want one of those simulators.
Those things are nasty. They're also $10,000.
Bro, that's the ultimate video game console. It's like a cockpit, race car cockpit.
Let's talk to our resident gamer in Brian, and he can set that up for us. How about that?
Brian, make that happen, man. I'll tell you what, if you set that up in your basement, I will never leave your house. I'm coming over there and I will just play NASCAR all night long.
Before we move on from NASCAR, big story of Darlington. In my opinion, biggest story of everything that happened there. Ryan Newman, after that horrific crash, back in the driver's seat. Nice to see.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That whole story, man, you forget just how bad that accident was, and obviously they showed it a few times on the air. For him to walk out, what was it, 3 days later out of the hospital?
Yeah.
After that accident?
Yeah.
Holding his daughter's hands and to be back racing again? It's incredible. Like, it goes to show the advancements. There's luck. Don't get me wrong. He was blessed that day.
Yeah.
But it also goes to show the advancements in safety and what NASCAR's done to react to incidents like what happened with Dale Earnhardt and some of the other unfortunate drivers that have lost their lives due to accidents and whatnot. Yeah. This type of accident, for it to happen and him to walk out of the hospital. Yeah, he had a brain bruise, I think is what they said. So he had like kind of concussion type symptoms, right. But outside of that, unreal.
Yeah. Well, and talk about safety advancements, right? So NFL engineers and Oakley, right, are actually testing prototypes for modified face masks that contain surgical or N95 material for NFL Players Association. This was actually was announced by the NFL Players Association medical director on Monday. What are your thoughts on them incorporating something like this into masks to further them during this whole situation?
That's interesting. I mean, when you're talking about the kind of energy that's exerted on a football field, and I don't know if you've ever put on a mask, like one of those N95 masks, but they're kind of restrictive feeling, like in how much oxygen that you can get, right? That if you've got somebody who's running full-fledged out there, like I wonder how restrictive that would be, how impossible it would be to breathe. Ryan says 0% chance. He would know better than anybody. He's a guy that has to wear these N95 masks all the time at work. I don't know. Again, there are engineers out there and there are people out there that are far more advanced than I am, that may figure out a way to allow them to be more breathable, easier to breathe in than just a regular N95 mask. They've got to explore every option that they can to try to keep these guys safe, right? And I think this is just a step in that direction. This doesn't mean that it's going to happen. This just means that they're working on the technology to see if it's even feasible. And I think what Ryan and I are both saying is that I personally can't see it happening, but technology,
I give them credit. Amazing. I give them credit for trying to look and see, is there a way that we can incorporate, you know, instead of it being an open mask, maybe it's the N95, discs that are in there, the breathable discs. Maybe that's in every section of it, right? You know, there's possibilities, but I give them credit for trying to take the step in that direction, regardless of what's happening. So I really, really, truly understand it. One of the other things that I want to bring up was keeping local. Did you see the thing that Michael Phelps did with ESPN, right? Very, very heartfelt from Michael Phelps. He's come out over the past few weeks, really, with his struggles with ADHD as well as depression. He struggled with it, you know, previously, but it's just gotten worse, honestly, with the COVID, as it has for many people. Through this pandemic, it's just so hard. But he feels that it shows that athletes and celebrities are human by them talking about it publicly, right, and taking it out into the forefront. And I think it really kind of gives a true aspect that when you see this guy, that you look at a guy like Michael Phelps and you say, like, all right, here's a guy that is undefeatable, so to speak, right? We know he's had his issues here in Baltimore. Caught speeding in the tunnel and high and stuff like that, right?
Multiple times high.
Right. But for him to come out and openly talk about the serious struggles, and he didn't go into a lot of detail during the interview, but he basically said, look, I've been to a dark place a few times, right? it's very eye-opening, right? It gives you an idea of what's happening, but it really does show you. I think he makes a great point. It shows you these celebrities are real, and they go through the same struggles that a lot of people go through and a lot of us go through when we're dealing with being stuck inside and not being able to social distance and not be able to have the releases maybe that we necessarily have. It's I thought it was really nice and refreshing, especially for being a local guy, for him being on this national platform.
Yeah, I mean, I've been pretty open about my struggles personally with my mental health at times, and it's been an ongoing battle for a long time, right? So I can relate to this, and I think these are the types of people that need to use this platform to spread awareness about mental health. Like,
right.
I love this. I love when athletes use their platform for the betterment of society. And I think that's what Michael Phelps is doing here, because the big struggle with most people that suffer from some sort of depression is, one, just admitting that they have it, right?
Right.
And then two, being ashamed of it, right? And then most of them kind of absorb it and just, you know, marinate on it, and they don't talk about it. They don't express it. They don't get the help that they need. So they need more athletes like this. They need more public figures that are going through their own struggles to talk more about it, to bring awareness out, even if this affects one person's life, right? Yeah. If this allows one person to go seek the help that they needed, or, you know, to be more vocal about the struggles that they're going through, then it's worth it. You know, I do think that, and I hope Michael doesn't fall into this realm, that there's obviously a money play with this too, because I'm sure he's got some sort of sponsorship tie to some sort of mental health, like, you know, either group or awareness. Yeah. I hope he's not profiting off of this in any way. I'm not saying he is. I know that there have been some athletes in the past that have used it more so for the wrong reasons. And I don't think Michael Phelps is doing that, but I just like to see athletes use this for a positive spin, man. And this is pretty awesome.
Yeah. I think it's a great positive spin for him. And like you said, you know, to your point, if you are happen to be struggling with this, and if you are, go to the people that, you know, that are around you, your friends and family, those that are there to support you and, you know, be there for you in any way, no matter how big or small, they're there to help you. So, you know, definitely make sure you do that. The last thing I got to touch on, and I hate to end on these two sad notes with the rundown, right? But I thought it was worth bringing up because it's not far off that up the road. Former Pittsburgh Pirate Starling Marte put out on Monday, it was Monday after late afternoon on Instagram, that his wife, Noella, had passed away of a heart attack. And according to John Heyman, basically she broke her ankle and was in the hospital and said to be awaiting surgery when she passed. So this woman was literally waiting surgery on a broken ankle and has a heart attack in the hospital, and there's nothing they can do. And she passes away, and Marte loses his lifelong friend and wife.
Yeah.
Crazy situation.
Terrible, terrible situation. Sad story. But I mean, this goes to show that these types of things can happen to anybody at any given time, no matter how old you are, no matter how good a health you think you're in. Genetics are genetics, and things happen, right? And it's sad, you know, that this girl was young. I think she was in her late 20s, early 30s. She was young.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It makes me wonder what was going on in the hospital. Did they give her something they shouldn't have given her? Like, I don't know. Again, I'm a bit of a pessimist. This is now the third time I've said this on tonight's show. So I always start thinking, like, God, if she would have just had a random heart attack and passed or something at her house or whatever, we wouldn't even be questioning it. But the fact that she broke her ankle and it happened in the hospital makes you think foul play in some sort of way, or a mistake
wrong dosage,
wrong medication, something like pre-op medication, something went wrong. But I guess they'll do their due diligence and do their investigation. I'm sure that'll come out.
To that, maybe defense in a little bit, right? Maybe she's never had a surgery like that before. And maybe she
I'm not saying
stressed.
That's not a possibility.
I'm just throwing another idea out there, right? She was super stressed and she was doing that.
Right.
But to your point, the situation in which it happened It makes you scratch your head just a little bit. You hope that that's not the case. You hope that it was just natural. But, you know, awful story. You know, huge prayers out to the Marte family, as that's just a really bad story, really bad situation. So,
yeah.
And now it's time for the 2 minute warning.
I'll never get tired of that song. I'll never get tired of the copyright infringement emails that we get every week when we play it on YouTube. But I heard it a couple times during this. You know, obviously that song comes from the, I mean, it wasn't made for it, but it was the intro song for the Bulls through the 90s when, you know, Michael Jordan was there. So we heard it quite a few times in that documentary. It was one of those songs when I was a kid because I was a Bulls fan, right? I wasn't even a basketball fan. I was just a Bulls fan. I loved that whole production, that whole player intro, all of it, man. It gets your blood boiling.
Who didn't love that? That's where we pulled it from,
so
for God's sake.
Awesome.
We literally were like, we need to find that one. That's the one that we need. That's the one that we want.
Right.
All right. So this week's 2 minute warning is going to be a tad bit different. We've done this a few times where we're going to go a little bit longer on one single topic. So we're going to go a minute here. All right. So I'm going to give you the preface and then what you need to respond to. All right. The NFL on Fox Instagram account this week asked a question. They posed a question. Which is tougher? A, making a catch while guarded by Stephon Gilmore, or B, breaking up a pass while guarding Michael Thomas? I want you to answer that question first. Then I want you to talk about what you think of the war of words that started between Devontae Parker and Michael Thomas himself. Because Parker said A. That's all he said. He just responded to it, said A. Then Michael Thomas responded, for you, yes. Go run some numbers up, then you can talk. I lapped you and you've been in the league longer than me, first rounder. Lot more was said than that. You got to go check it out. But I'm gonna shout it out to you when the buzzer starts here. Give us which one you would pick, why, and who you think is right in this situation.
All right, so if I'm gonna pick the tougher, I'm gonna say B, breaking up a pass while guarding Michael Thomas. And I say this because being a bigger guy, being a physical guy, right, when I played the tight end position, I know it was tough for smaller corners, smaller linebackers to get positioning and to find leverage to be able to break up a pass that was coming to me, because I used my size to my advantage. With my basketball background, I used my size to keep space between me and the defender, right? So I think that's the tougher task than making a catch while guarded by Stephon Gilmore. And that's no disrespect to Gilmore. I think Gilmore's great. But the beef to go back and forth, I think, is kind of petty. This is just, I think, players being bored right now. They've got nothing else to do. They got nothing else to talk about. So they're on social media doing all this shit. I think it's ridiculous, but I don't know, man. It's social media. This is kind of what happens.
Yeah. So, all right. So if I'm going to answer the question, I'm actually going to go the opposite of you. I think it's Gilmore. And here's the reason why. It's a game of inches. It's a game of fingertips. All Stephon Gilmore has to do is get his fingertip on the ball, right? That's
tough to get around a big guy.
I understand that. Michael Thomas is a big guy, but all you got to do is get a fingertip on the ball. That's all you got to do. Fingertip on the ball. It's a game of inches. And there's argument to be made of both, but I think Gilmore has a just as big of an impact here. As far as the war of words here, like, this just kept on going and going and going. Like, Parker was like, oh, well, if I had, you know, 300 receptions, I might have a chance. And he was like, well, maybe if you played better, you'd have 300 chances. Like, something to those effects. It was just back and forth. It's childish. To your point, these guys have nothing better to do right now than be on social media, give each other crap. Fox NFL, thank you for the entertainment. I appreciate it.
Was pretty entertaining. It definitely was pretty entertaining. 2.5 hours, Scott.
Oh, man.
Get us the hell out of here.
We're
man.
Getting out of here, buddy. Yeah. I want to thank all of you guys for watching the show this week. I don't even have it in front of me. We want to thank all of you guys for watching the show this week. Check us out on our website, www.birdlandbs.com. Obviously, all of our episodes, learn about each of us, contact us, get yourself some gear and more. Make sure you also check us out, bigplay.com, Big Play Twitter page, download Big Play app, birdlandsports.com as well. If you actually want to check us out directly at Birdland Sports, where you can find us on everything, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, go check us out on Twitter, at FredBLBS, at ScottBLBS, at Bartender_Blake. Make sure you always check out the audio version of the podcast as well. If you want to kill some time during the day, I really don't know what else how else you have to do other than watch our show and listen to our show. Make sure you also drop us a review if you're watching us or listening to us, especially on the audio versions. Drop us a review in one of those platforms so that we can get those reviews and it gets out to more people.
We appreciate that. That goes a long way with getting us found out there. So every review that you can put on Apple, you know, podcast, or even on our website, anywhere you can find them, man, it would be great.
Greatly appreciated, guys. So as always, we want to thank each of you guys for tuning in. Hopefully, Fred, we don't have too many more of these remote shows and we can kind of get back
one
to normal.
More. Hopefully one more and then I'll be back in the studio.
We're praying on one more here. So thank you guys for tuning in each and every week, every Tuesday night, 7:30. You guys know where to find us. Come find us next week. Make sure you also give us a nice share so we can keep these numbers going even while there's not a lot of sports going on. We appreciate it. For Fred, myself, and Brian, who's back in the back scenes handling the chat room, we appreciate you, buddy. But we appreciate all of you guys tuning in. We'll see you guys next week.
See you.